Good afternoon and welcome to Radio Estina. I'm your host, Alex P. Linder, coming at you with 750,000 watts of power from Northeast Missouri. Probably kind of the hub of the universe, you know. And I must say it is a glorious day here. It is a day so warm and yet so late in the year, probably stepped on a worm, that even the laziest nigger is likely to turn out and vote for the grow man. Grobama. Bongo boy. Obongo. Brobama. Rarely has a presidential candidate had a name more suitable for comedic purposes. Anyway, I was, doing something I very, very rarely do. Since boys younger than you to the gas chamber didn't want to do it, felt I owed it to them. Watching Fox News, but really I didn't learn that much, so I Googled to see what was going on. Before I get into that, we'll probably go about 2 hours a day. I don't want to go too awfully long. It's an absolutely beautiful day here. I've been walking around for a little while. It's probably about 75. And what is today? November 4th? Tuesday, November 4th, year of our Lord, 2008. You don't find mid-upper 70s days in November very often. Today we're going to talk about a number of different terms. We're going to talk about the election a little bit. A little bit about free speech. And we'll also talk about an article appeared in Culture Wars. You know that's one of our favorite sources if you're a regular listener. We'll talk about how the Jews have insinuated their way into Catholic parochial education through their formal association that those Catholic schools have. Undermining and subversion are two big themes of this show. Name Radio Estina is the Russian word. It's an opposite of Pravda. Pravda being the ideological truth or the big lie. Counterpose of the big lie or the tiny little honest to God gritty facts. That's what we bring you here. Not the lie, but the facts. And so, what Google says right now, it looks like the Democrats are poised to make great gains. And let's see. Let's take a look at, this is a Reuters story from, maybe an hour ago. Writing a wave of resentment against Republican President Bush, Democrats had headed toward winning perhaps their biggest majorities in the U.S. Congress in decades, Tuesday's elections, polls showed. So, this is what they're saying in the middle of the day, and of course we often have where they try to predict prematurely the outcome in order to affect voting on the West Coast, which will still be open another 5, 6, 7 hours, I would suppose. I would have to guess that, and that's one thing I didn't quite pull up here. Hold on a second. If you go to weather.com, I just want to see what the national map looks like. Let's see. Yeah. Apart from some of the easternmost states, looks like a pretty good day through the Mississippi Valley and most of the country. A little rainier in the west and a little rainier in D.C. area. I guess there's a fair amount of bad weather in the east, but other than that, the middle of the country from Texas to Michigan, Florida up through Kentucky, it's super nice. So, 73 in Atlanta, but only 43 in Salt Lake, 51 in Washington, 75 in Kansas City, that's 167 miles from where this broadcast is originating, 60-something in Pittsburgh, gives you a good sense. Anyway, I would think that would tend to favor a large Negroid turnout, since they're probably the laziest, stupidest, and least likely to vote, and most likely to give up if there's any any pot to smoke or anything on TV, or they forget or whatever, or there's inclement weather. Anyhow, says, Democrats who now control the Senate 51-49 and the House of Representatives 235-199 have pledged to withdraw U.S. troops from Bush's Iraq war, roll back Bush's tax cuts for the rich. And there you see the Reuters. You see the Reuters writer using the Democrats' terms as though they are objective terms. And move to end the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. Of course, they don't tell you the government created that crisis, the Great Depression. They portray government always as the solver of problems rather than the cause of problems. What I've had cause to say many times, the government uses as pretext a problem that it itself has created in order to expand its role either in the marketplace or in the private sphere. The natural tendency of government is to expand. Bureaucrats want to increase the size of their offices. They want to increase the number of personnel working under them. They want to increase the size of their budget. And they do that by pretending there are unmet needs. And that's always how it's written up in the papers. You will literally never see a government department called greedy. Only corporations and individuals are greedy, according to the media. But for a number of incentives of its own, the press has an interest in a large, powerful, centralized government. And that is why they uniformly support it. Anyhow, I guess we'll see how that plays out later tonight, and we can talk about it later or next week. Because, after all, we know that both candidates and both parties are backed by Jewish money. And we know that it's the Jewish agenda that's going to be served, regardless of who is elected. Whether it's Obama, who's a black Marxist and a black nationalist. And we've already seen plenty of evidence on the boards of how his potential election is increasing the uppityness factor of the niggers. Because niggers deal purely and solely in externals because they lack the internal combustion engine. They lack the processing power to understand anything internally. So you'd see blacks walking around Africa carrying a briefcase. They'd be businessmen. You sort of see the same thing in the NBA. If one of the giant ape-sized niggers is injured, why, it sits on the best on the bench dressed in a business suit, because it'd be a businessman. Basketball just happened to be a business. You know, you understand, that's how it is. The nigger deals in externals. That means if a nigger is president, why, the nigger thinks, well, we're the shit. We're the bomb. We're the shit bomb. And to the extent it can be called thinking, that's how niggers think. So there will be violence brought to white people because a nigger is elected. That is without a doubt. People say worse is better, or this will wake whites up. I don't ever venture into that area. I don't know what's better other than in an end state type solution where you have people like me, people who think like we do at VNN, running things, rather than the Jews who sick these niggers on us. Now, so as I say, we're going to probably run about 2 hours today, probably an hour on the E. Michael Jones article, but we'll lead in by discussing terminology. Just before I came on air, I happened to see an interesting, semi-interesting article, and I want to talk about this article regarding the U.S. Supreme Court and free speech, and also an Australian article talking about government's plan to institute net filters down there and make them mandatory and unavoidable. Just show you the way the Jews have Jewed the conception of free speech. And then I will tie that into some of our own words, some of my own coinages that are necessary, not because they're mine, but because there's an objective political situation, and if our side doesn't come up with a term, then the problem that we seek to solve doesn't exist. The hate that we seek to oppose isn't acknowledged by anybody because a term doesn't exist. Now, let me see here. First we'll talk about the U.S., then we'll talk about the Australian. Where be it? Okay. U.S. Supreme Court hears case on broadcast indecency, and the bulk of this article, which This is a Los Angeles Times article. Discusses various curse words or swear words like shit and fuck, and the Supreme Court regulating it. And what we've always explained here at Radio Estina, which you'll never hear anywhere else, is that the Jew deliberately seeks to take a noble phrase like free speech, written up and protected in our Constitution. Our right to free speech is secured by the First Amendment. Secured means they wrote it down as an acknowledgement, not they didn't give us the right. They acknowledge that we have the natural right to free speech, to criticize our leaders. Now, what the Jew would like to do is translate the actual and intended and historical and contextual meaning of free speech, which is the right to political criticism, into either pornography or obscenity. So the Jew wants to say that your ability to curse wherever and whenever you want is a measure of the free speech rights that you're afforded, or your ability to sell Hustler magazines outside of a church or a school, that's your free speech right. But the Jew wants to deny what free speech actually meant according to our white people who founded this country. What they meant by free speech was you have the right to criticize the governor of New York or the senator from Vermont or the president of the United States regardless if he or she doesn't like it. Except there wouldn't have been any she, there would have been only he, because they didn't have women voting back then, let alone niggers. You understand? So free speech meant something entirely different to the white man who created America than to the Jew who took it over. He kept the external form because it fools the slowpokes. It fools the lazy minds. All they see is the external, and too many whites are nearly as dumb as niggers. They can't understand anything below the surface. So they don't look into what the Jew means by free speech. He means pornography and obscenity. So we have articles writing up this pseudo-debate over whether you should be allowed to say fuck shit here or there. We have the Jews popularizing the late comedian George Carlin's seven words you can't say on TV. And thus in the public mind. You know, and then the Jews also producing movies, such as the movie about Larry Flint. I forget the name of it. It starred Woody Harrelson, I believe. But always they're trying to inculcate in the public mind their perverse conception, their deliberate misconception, their deliberate altering of what is meant by free speech until only their definition obtains. And people have forgotten the old, original, and true meaning of the term. That's what it's my job to teach you, so you can go out and spread it among your friends. Free speech means the right to criticize those in power. The Jew has replaced free speech with license, obscenity, pornography, while taking away the political content. He wants to call political criticism that he doesn't like hate. It's never hate when he's mocking rednecks or white trash, or Euro trash, or white boys, or dumb blondes, or preachers, or Germans, or Southerners, or Catholic priests. That's never hate. It's only hate when you make factual, pointed criticisms of Jews, or the colors they use to destroy our society. Coloreds like Obama. What do you mean Obama's free and independent? He's Muslim, if anything. Who's funding him? His speeches aren't written by Abu Hassan. They're written by David Axelrod. He's not funded by Bin Laden. He's funded by Pritzkers, Rezcos. Jews are the main supplier of money to both parties. Jews always bet on all horses. Jews always win. It's always their agenda that gets pushed. Now, Obama might push it harder than McCain will. Pardon me, Obama might push their domestic agenda harder than McCain will, whereas McCain might push their international agenda harder than Obama would. But if one's pushing 1-4 and the other one's pushing 6-8 agenda items, they're still pushing the same agenda. It's all anti-white all the way through. There's not one thing they would do that's good for whites. And that ought to be your criteria for whether or not you vote and who you vote for. Which one of these people is good for the white community? McCain? No. He'll get your boy killed abroad fighting for Israel. Both Obama and McCain support affirmative action, that is, racial discrimination against whites. Whites are endlessly lambasted using a Jewish propaganda term, racism, created by the communist Trotsky. They are told that they are the beneficiaries of white privilege. Yet just as I came on the air, I noted on VNNforum.com, my forum, which I encourage you to join, that David Duke's Euro conference for whites interested in having a future and protecting their interest, was canceled by a hotel outside of Memphis, no doubt due to pressure from Jews. Jews who will step in wherever they can concoct a case and claim that whites are denying coloreds their civil rights to freely associate, to vote, to sleep in a hotel. Remember, that falls under public accommodations. That's what they opened us up to. It used to be that innkeepers and restaurateurs were free to decide who could come onto their premises. But after the Jews' civil rights revolution, read, communist takeover took place in the mid-60s, whites lost that right. They lost that inalienable right. Well, it turned out it was alienable, didn't it? That's why I don't like the language of rights. All that was lost by the Jews, who viciously pursue a double standard that benefits them and endangers us, normal whites, who created the country. And so now we see that one of their own may be on the verge of taking power. What will this mean to the 35 to 40 million niggers in this country who've been trained from day one by the media, by their politicians, by the preachers in their churches, by their school teachers, by the textbooks used in those schools, that they are downcast in America because of whites? Rather than being taught that if they were in Africa, they'd be beating their clothes on rocks in a river and eating each other or grubs and living in mud huts, they are taught that whites are guilty of oppressing them rather than exalting them or elevating them over their natural condition, which is essentially a implumus biped, a featherless biped, as used William Pierce's term, scuttling around Africa a little better than any animal, in fact, worse than most of the animals. The Jews who control education in America and determine what is taught in our schools and in our textbooks see to it that black racial consciousness is stoked. It's stoked in two ways: by pride in non-existent achievements, blacks built the pyramids, and stoked by creating a hatred of whites who the Jews claim oppress these blacks. Reality is, we gave them a little taste of the big leagues. This is how humans do it. You're not quite there yet. A few 100,000 year day, the Wadi putting you limits on what you fellas might achieve, but you're not there yet. The wiser blacks knew that, but we've seen on earlier radio stations how the Jews consciously and scientifically went about undermining legitimate black nationalism, whether of the self-help school, that is, stay in America and cast down your bucket and develop as you can, or in the overt back to Africa school of Marcus Garvey. I encourage you to listen to the earlier editions of this show. It's educational. It's intended to be somewhat like a college professor who isn't bound by the strictures of what is called political correctness, which is actually Semitical correctness or Judeo-Bolshevism. communism garbage for whites, deliberate inculcation of doctrines known to be false, as the Jews state in their protocols of the elders of Zion. I can give you the truth, because I'm not beholden to any group of financial supporters or advertisers or party hack bosses or Jewish editors, and yet everything else you hear today on Election Day will have first passed through a Jewish filter. But as James Hawthorne says, there is no Jew between me and you. What you're hearing are pure white ideas from a white mind going directly into your head, into your ears or eyes, from text or from an MP3. Like I say, I am the only thing you will hear today, apart from the people you chat with, that hasn't come to you after first being passed through a Jew whose agenda runs totally against your own interests. Whether you flip on the TV, you flip on the radio, whatever, you're hearing a Jew who's not like you. So, creating tumult over free speech that's actually obscenity is important to the Jews in order to mislead the public and misschool them as to the true meaning of free speech. So we get this ridiculous sort of interplay. But they may not speak for the majority. Justice John Paul Stevens commented that the F word in some formulations can be, quote, unquote, very funny. He also wondered whether the government could ban other words that refer to sex or excrement. Roberts, who has two young children, said families who watch a Hollywood awards program should not have to hear foul words. It is different, he said, if a live sports broadcast picks up a foul word in the background. The context makes all the difference in the world, the Chief Justice said. Under its policy, the FCC could fine broadcasters who aired the awards program but spare the sports broadcaster. Again, the FCC is functioning as a political control, and that's one reason the government, particularly the electronic media, always serve the government's interest and advance its agenda, because they have it in common, since they are regulated by that government. Without their license to broadcast, their properties are worth nothing. So you're never going to hear about government greed from a government-licensed media institution. You understand that? Now I want to read a quote from hideous Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She says, the court needed to consider the free speech issue. That is the, quote, the big elephant in the room, she said. So, we know, as I've said on earlier broadcasts, that the Jew associates looseness with philo-Semitism, that is tolerance for Jews, for anti-white Jews, for Loxist Jews, and he associates continence with anti-Semitism. Therefore, anything that degrades the tone of society, that lowers the moral tone of society, will be supported by the Jew because they think it's good for Jews. So, the more swearing there is, the more nudity, the more sex there is on TV, the better for Jews. That may seem a little bit of an odd connection to some of you if you're new to this, but I assure you it's there. Maybe you've never heard of the authoritarian personality, or you don't know the way Jews think, but they believe all this stuff hangs together. If you're self-controlled, you're out of debt, you don't fuck everything that moves, you're careful about what you do, you're going to tend to be critical of Jews, and you're not going to accept their lies so easily, whether those lies are about the Jews or about the blacks or about anything else. They don't want that. They want you loosened up, easily penetrated, open to influences, particularly bad influences, because they know that most of the influences you're going to get are going to come ultimately from their mass media, which is surely not intended for your benefit, but for theirs. So, the more nudity, the more sex, the better for Jews. somewhere else on VNN Forum I saw, I think last night, report that kids who were exposed to more of the hyper-sexually prurient programming, such as Sex and the City, were likelier to become pregnant. And that's what the Jews want. They want people to mess up their lives, because that way they pose less of a competitive threat to Jews. Now let's look at the flip side. Apart from loosening the rules for obscenity and for pornography in order to reduce anti-Semitism by making the goy a bunch of all fucking non-thinking beasts, the Jews want to restrict, contrarily, political speech. And any kind of criticism they don't like, they want to call hate, and they want to outlaw. And so the process in that regard is less advanced in the United States and more advanced in Europe and, as we'll see in this particular story, Australia. Title of this story is Australia's Compulsory Internet Filtering Costly, Ineffective. And this is really remarkable. Maybe a lot of you Americans don't understand just how far this stuff can go. By comparison, it's like in Britain, they not only have gun control to where you can't own any guns, they have knife control. Well, in Australia, well, they also have the same thing. They also have complete gun control. They also want to have complete speech control. And the form this takes, whether in Canada or in Australia or in Europe, is either you're forced to accept the government, i.e. the Jews, version of certain historical events, and if you don't, you're guilty of inciting hatred of the dead, blah, blah, blah. Or they have overt anti-hate laws, as they call them, that essentially prevent whites from criticizing minorities. And that includes factual statements, because as they've said overtly, bluntly, in one country, the truth is no defense. The fact that minorities might be 10% of the population and commit 60% of the felonies, that it's true doesn't matter. They don't want you saying it. So while they usually try to keep the cover of having free speech, the EU in particular does this, they so define it that in fact they suppress free speech. They've criminalized it while keeping it in name. Now let's see what they're trying to do in Australia. This article, which appeared October 29th, 2008, written by Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, says the federal government of Australia is planning to make internet censorship compulsory for all Australians and could ban controversial websites on euthanasia or anorexia. Well, it could also ban it on anything racial. People might object, for example, in Australia to bringing in all kinds of Middle Easterners or Africans or Asians to swamp the white nation. And that, in fact, is what we see there in terms of immigration. Now, that's an example of a hot political issue there. And what we've seen in Australia and talked about on earlier Radio Astinas is that Jews were at the forefront of the movement to give the Aborigines legal privilege over whites, and also to reverse the white immigration policy that used to obtain, as they did in the U.S., and turn immigration from something that was 90% European and white into something that was 90% non-white, deliberately to reduce white power in Australia and undermine white culture. This is what Jews do quite literally wherever they go. They work to undermine the white host and destroy the stock of the people by importing third world coloreds and encouraging through their media these coloreds to mate with the local inhabitants, producing a lower level of human that can't compete with the Jews for power. This is why Jews have been known as nation wreckers for 2,000 years. Maybe after 2,000 years we ought to learn the right way to deal with Jews. And while it's true they've been swept out of countries over that 2,000 year period many, many, many times, the expulsion was always horizontal. Maybe we need to think about making it a vertical expulsion. Jews 12 feet underground don't advocate for open borders. They don't advocate for doing in freedom of speech, and they don't advocate for taking away your right to defend yourself from the third world monkeys they've set in power over you and loosed on the streets to attack you. And there was a story this week down in Arkansas. A beautiful young anchor of a local news show was raped, tortured, and murdered in her home. Her name was Presley. Look it up. Presley. Blonde, blue-eyed. Killed by a couple of niggers. I'll bet anything you haven't seen this on the national news. Well, the type of nigger that did this is only going to be empowered by a Barack Obama victory. Open season on white. Remember, these are simians. These blacks have an average IQ of 85 in America because they have a little bit of white blood in them, and 70 in Africa, or even lower than that in some of those countries. They are not able to think the way white humans do, with their average IQ of about 100. In no way do they deserve, or are they capable of handling, equal political rights. So in Australia, the stuff I've just said in the last 2-3 minutes, they would make illegal. You wouldn't be allowed to access a website that contained that kind of content. You wouldn't be able to download an MP3 in which someone told you what was going on there. You would be allowed access only to that information they wanted you to have access to. We're not talking about China here, we're talking about Australia. The writer says, Australia's level of net censorship will put it in the same league as countries including China, Cuba, Iran, and North Korea. And the government will not let users opt out of the proposed national internet filter when it is introduced. Isn't that incredible? Free speech is an issue whites have fought over for hundreds of years, and they finally arrived at, you have the right to criticize your government. You have the right to read different political materials and make up your own mind. Well, they want to reverse that. Go back to the Oriental way, the black way, and the Jewish way. Complete censorship and totalitarian control. This is the nut, the hub, the guts, the essence of our white cause. We want to live as whites, among whites, and around whites. We aren't like niggers. We don't need a dictator to tell us what to do and to tell us what to think. Jews with their rabbis, niggers with their dipshit potentates, they do need a censor. They do need someone to tell them. We don't. Tying our future to the Jew and the nigger is like tying a millstone around our neck or tying cement shoes to our feet and jumping off a boat. It will sink us. It will kill our race. We can't live the way they do. We aren't them. We're a different species than they are. Race doesn't even go far enough. We are a different species than the Jew or the nigger. Broadband Communications and Digital Economy Minister Stephen Conroy admitted the federal government's $44.2 million internet censorship plan would now include two tiers. One level of mandatory filtering for all Australians, and an optional level that will provide a, quote, clean feed, unquote, censoring adult material. So, they'll have a two-tier system, and it's all entirely mandatory. And on the first tier, you can bet your life. The adult tier, they will allow all the pornography you want, but they will screen out all political material they don't like. They'll call it hate. And say, you cannot have access to it. And it doesn't matter if you want access to it. We are saying you can't have access to it. That would certainly include this radio show. But, of course, all the porn produced by Jews, because it brings the Jews money and it reduces anti-Semitism, they believe, will be perfectly legal. Do you see how this works? I believe it was Aldous Huxley. If it wasn't him, it was another Huxley who said, they will take your political freedom, and in exchange they'll give you sexual license and TV showing mass sports. I added that last part, but that's what they've done. You're free to be an adult kindergartner, watching the niggers on the tube and watching porn. But if you want to say in how your community is run, no. They've got all the answers, and you have no right to go a different way. Censorship is mandatory. Following their plan is mandatory. You are enslaved by them, and they don't even want you to know it. Despite planning to hold live trials before the end of the year, Senator Conroy, again this is in Australia, said it was not known what content the mandatory filter would bar, with euthanasia or pro-anorexia sites on the chopping block. We are talking about mandatory blocking, where possible, of illegal material. Of course, in Australia, the most famous victim of these hate crimes laws they have, which are not mentioned in this article, but would in fact be the main focus of this filtering or this censorship. They've strung up a German-born man named Frederick Tobin, who's a PhD, because he has alternative views of the history of the Jews during World War II. And he has been fined and censored over that by the local body of Jews, has hauled him up before the Human Relations Commission or whatever it is down there. And so they want to make sure that his site, Adelaide Institute, Google it and you can find his stuff. They want to make sure that nobody is telling the truth about stuff they put out lies on. That includes all race, anthropology, and those areas of history that don't feed into their bogus narrative of themselves as victims and everyone else as their persecutors. When the facts are, they are the predators. They are the richest ethnic group in the world, and they are the predators, and the rest of us are prey. And they want to keep us from knowing that. Censoring the internet is a good way to do it. They already have control of all the other mass media. Now they're trying to assert control over the internet. The other media are almost all top-down. That is, they talk, they broadcast, and you listen. But the internet is peer-to-peer, side-to-side. Anyone can talk to anyone. You don't have to go through a hub. You don't have to go through a filter or a control. You can read what you want, and you can talk to whom you want. They don't like that. It endangers them because their whole being is based on a lie. They are the lie. They are the embodiment of the lie, or the evil, the devil. They are the... You're of your father, Satan, is what Jesus said about the Jews. Think Jesus was wrong when he said that the Jews are the children of the devil, the spawn of the devil? Jews were just calling that hotel where Stormfront and David Duke were going to hold their conference this coming weekend and discuss white interests. The same Jews who will send out lawyers and cops to bust any white they claim interferes with the civil rights of a black who's typically trying to commit some kind of criminal activity, turn around and go after a conference held by whites in which they're trying to advocate, define, and pursue their own agenda. So there's an obvious double standard, and the point here is if we don't rise up and defend our own, we're done. It's not merely to point out that they're biased and they uphold a double standard. That's obvious. We have to get beyond that and fight back at them. Now, let's see here. Previously, the NetNanny proposal was going to allow Australians who wanted uncensored access to the web the option to contact their internet service provider and be excluded from the service. But now they want to do away with that. They want to make it... And they're also bringing in child pornography here, and basically they're using that as another one of their false fronts. So in the name of claiming that they're going after child pornography, what they're actually going after is political speech they don't like, which is criticism of the system, which masquerades as the voice of the people, democracy, representative republic, but in fact is one party, totalitarian control. So there you have it. In the U.S., the Supreme Court is trying to loosen up the rules for obscenity and pornography. And in Australia, they're trying to censor the net very blatantly, very overtly. They're not even really hiding what they're doing. And they're going after political speech. And they want to make it impossible for citizens in Australia to access sites and voices like mine. Think about that. Think about the danger involved in that. All right, now let's shift gears a little bit. And let's tell you what, I'm going to play two songs, then I'll come back and I'll talk a little bit about different words. Some of the stuff I've seen. But I'm going to take just a little break here. And we'll talk on that for about half an hour, then we'll come back and we'll give an hour to the infiltration of the Catholic area. What should I play here? Let's see. First we'll play One in a Million by Guns N' Roses.
Moving along, hi, you're one in a million. Ooh,
right, that was... That was Guns N' Roses. One in a Million. And a lot of people really liked that song years ago. Now I want to talk a little about the use of terminology. Talk about this for maybe, I don't know, half hour, a few minutes at least, until I get tired of it. And then we'll talk about the Jones article, which is pretty interesting. Politics is mainly conducted either with bullets or with words. Word wars or bullet wars. And our side is so effing stupid, half the time it never even names what it's fighting, and whether out of cowardice or sheer simple stupidity. And it's obvious that the dominant attitude or feeling or drive of our times is the hate that Jews have for whites. And I've discussed this over the last 10 years, and I coined a term, Loxism, which may or may not come from Tacitus. And it's the hatred that Jews have for whites. And it is the driving force behind their attempt to overturn our traditional laws, whether free speech, immigration, what have you. Destroying white minds, destroying white bodies is what Jews do. Every form of nature has a parasite that it has difficulty perceiving, let alone fighting back against. And yet, a tiny percentage of whites is, for whatever reason, able to perceive this parasite and educate others as to its presence. And that's what I would fall into. That's what VNN would fall into, just as there's apparently a percentage of Nordic whites who are simply not capable of getting AIDS for whatever biological reason. Now, all we ever hear about in the media is anti-Semitism, this so-called hatred of Jews that just seems to follow them wherever they go. I mean, whether they're in Rome 2,000 years ago or Palestine today or the U.S. or France, wherever you go, you always hear anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism. Yet somehow this anti-Semitism isn't bad enough that Jews ever want to leave these countries and move to Israel. So how bad can it be? It isn't bad enough that it's prevented them from becoming the single richest ethnic group in these different white majority states. So how bad can it be? And by contrast, they're trying to do with our immigration away with our immigration policies, with our speech laws, with our gun rights laws. So where's the word for them hating us? This is a point I've made repeatedly over 10 years. And the PhDs and whatever in the movement don't understand it. Well, now comes an article from the Occidental Observer where a guy basically says stuff I've said for years and then says he's going to hold it open for suggestions for a name for this hatred. Now, this is so typical of the despicable, cowardly conservatives. He knows damn well I've been saying that for 10 years. He knows damn well I'm the only one who ever came up with a name, but he won't quite quote me or cite me on it. So he's doing what these cowardly conservatives, and this is the group around McDonald, some of them are ex-VNN, they are stealing the arguments they can't come up with on their own, pretending they thought of it, and treating anyone who's not with them as though they're infradig, they're beneath their dignity to acknowledge. So, you know, I used to just laugh at this stuff. I used to laugh at these clowns who would copy something I said because they couldn't think on their own. But now I'm on the attack. Maybe I'm a little older, I'm a little more bitter. I don't tolerate this kind of crap. You know, I don't know what this clown's name is. I have no doubt he's someone I've had a fight with earlier. And, of course, I'm sure he's operating under a pseudonym, as most of these cowardly conservatives are. So, you know what, buddy? Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck the Occidental Observer. We're not going to link to you. And fuck anyone else who tries to fuck with VNN. If you're not loyal to us, go fuck yourself. You know, we have all these people come around, and I will mistreat people just slightly to see how they respond. Because often, even under the surface of someone who's very intelligent, there lurks the same basic impulse as we see in these drooling retards that I have more or less done away with from VNN Forum. So, all of a sudden a guy's thread isn't sticky, boom, he's gone. He comes to our forum to promote himself. And his threads, he writes stuff like, oh, you know, those kids were horribly murdered in Knoxville. If only there had been some reputable people there to speak about it, we might be able to change things. So our forum's good enough for him to come to and promote himself. But the fact that we held a meeting there and denounced that and did the one major bit of activism of that year, that's not reputable. It's not up to his standards. Fuck you, buddy. Beat it down the road, Jack. I'm tired of these self-promoting assholes who think they're going to use VNN. No longer. I'll admit, I probably had the wrong policy. Being open, friendly, tolerant, promoting everybody. Screw it. I guess the cunts are right. I'm going to become a cunt myself. If you're not helping promote VNN, fuck you. Get lost. I don't want you. You're no good. Fuck off. Do it yourself. You make it happen. Yeah, I never came up with Loxton. I never had that fucking idea 10 years ago. And you didn't know about it. But you can't cite me or quote me. When do I ever try to steal anything? I never do it. Never try to steal shit from other people. I can come up with 100 things for every one you clowns come up with. I don't need to steal, but it's fucking pathetic. Now, I really had emphasized to me when I was reading the book by... I've been reading lately, and I'm almost done with it. Not going to discuss it today, but the book by Whisker, a West Virginia prof, about Alfred Rosenberg and his attempt to Nordicize Christianity, strip it of all the Judaic elements and restore it to something befitting an Aryan man. And he really emphasizes that it's not any good for Nordics, for Nordic people in particular, to be worshiping a passive, suffering martyr like Christ, you know, all faggily laid out on the cross, and he's got that whole martyr pose that's so common in female attitudes, and yet even a lot of men seem to like that passive wimp. He's saying that's not Nordic. What's Nordic is being proud, noble, and bold, and honorable. And Christianity doesn't place an emphasis on honor or pride. It downplays honor in favor of this weak, miserable, slavish love. Love your friend, love your enemies too. Love your enemies more. What the fuck is that? It doesn't fit our people. But his point about honor, and part of honor is, you know what? Honor in a writer means you acknowledge if other people have the idea before you. Yeah, maybe you don't steal it literally word for word. But if you steal the basic idea, you're a fucking scum. You're not any better than the Jews. Why the fuck am I going to run to some anonymous pussy at the Occidental Observer who doesn't even operate under his own name, who's overtly stealing an idea? How are you one whit better than the goddamn kikes running things right now? I don't even know the guy's name. It's something Irish. And no doubt he's some fucking pussy who either used to write for us or had some run-in with me and who can't think of a better idea himself, so copies what I came up with. Fuck you. Fucking pussy. You know, and then, you know, undermining basically 10 years of our work, you've got McDonald having a goddamn kike sign off on his book. Yeah, it's his decision. Who am I to comment on it? You don't do that. You draw a line between white and Jew. It's the wrong way to go. And I'm pointing, this stuff all hangs together, this gutlessness. We don't deserve to exist if we really are this gutless. We steal other people's idea. We operate under pseudonyms or anonymously. We kibitz. Where's the boldness? Where's the honor? Where's the pride? You know what? It doesn't come off people from the British Isles very damn often. That's the funny part. That's what these guys don't get. The German people who stood up to the Jew, who understood what it was doing and had the balls to stand up and take that power away from them in a time and a place, those are the ones you look to for your model. Not for the way you dress. Not for their songs. I don't like World War II songs. I don't care if they're German. Well, I don't want to hear that stuff. I don't want to wear a swastika. It ain't about that. I mean, that's niggerish. It's not about the externals. It's about the internals. If you get an idea from someone else, you goddamn well know it. Credit them with it. When I was in good health, that stuff would just make me laugh. It's so fucking pathetic. It's such a pathetic admission of failure. It's kind of a combination of cowardice and snobbery, because I'm not a PhD, so I must not have a good idea. That doesn't mean I can't be stolen from. Do you ever hear me assert my intellectual property rights to stuff? It's fucking pathetic clowns. I come across other people, and I go, oh, that's a good line. And you know what? I'll find out later, these people stole that line from a lot of this classic suppressed literature over the course of the 20th century. I'll see, that's where you got that. But you had to play it off like you were the big dog and came up with it yourself, huh? Real credible there. That's really white. Really white of you. Let me tell you, friends, there is no solution in conservatism. Jared Taylor is not our friend. Occidental Observer is not our friend. All these goddamn kike-loving, wino-loving, another term I came up with, white in name only. All right, and there's a whole range of these growing up. You see, what we're seeing now is the white memes are making their way into all the conservative publications that they're allowed to get into and dominating them. Basically, everybody now knows, because of the work we've done at VNN and the work others have done, people now know that unless you're talking about race and Jews, you're just spitting in the wind. You're fooling yourself. Everybody knows that Obama and McCain alike are run by Jew money. And the paleocon sites don't even censor this so much anymore. I spent most of last night reading through Taki Mag and Chronicles, which I hadn't read in a few months. And, you know, I didn't even see VNN people. Some of them were. But most of them, it's just a general cultural development. People now know that basically these paleocons and libertarians, they don't have anything. It's not like we white nationalists even have that much, but we are the only ones with potential. The paleocons have an embryo, and we have an embryo, but their embryo is only capable of growing into a mouse. Our embryo is capable of growing into a man. And you know what? At some level, they know it. I was amazed to see Greasy John Zmirak writing that every year he rereads Camp of the Saints. And now he must ultimately reject it as a good Catholic, but every year he rereads it. And you know why he rereads it? Because he knows it's right. He knows what Raspail says is right. And he knows that all the goddamn Jibu dogma in the world ain't going to change that. Reality, my friend, exists. Reality exists. It can't be gainsaid by any Jibu bullshit. Reality is that which doesn't go away when you stop believing it. Oh, isn't that a brilliant line, Mr. Linder? You're such a... Oh, wait a minute. Did I steal... Yeah, I got that from someone, so let me credit that person rather than pretending I came up with that on my own. Philip Dick. Crazy Phil. The Dickster. Science fiction writer. He came up with that. Reality is that which doesn't go away when you stop believing in it. I love that line, and the reason I love it is because, you know, yeah, there's a little more than your self-esteem and your opinion, buddy. There's something called objective reality. Okay? Races aren't the same. The Catholic Church is wrong in its position on race. Not gonna change. Not going away, because you don't like it. I met a man upon the stair. I wish he wasn't there. How did that go? That was a poem by, like, John Sicardi or someone else. As I was walking up the stair, I met a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. I wish he'd go away. Isn't that great? Doesn't that get at something in our nature? Aren't we weak, cowardly, miserable, and cramped of soul when we can't acknowledge reality? And aren't we full, blossoming, giant, blue-eyed, grinning, smiling when we can observe reality? We can deal with it. We are proud people. Pride is not bad. It can be bad, but it's not inherently bad, as the Christians say. Standing up, being tall, being firm, overcoming obstacles, being dominant, dominating the scene, as I like to say. That is Nordic. That is what we are. We are not passive, crimped, crabbed, crabby whiners. That's what the conservatives are. And anybody, by God, who tries to mix the one with the other is doing the devil's work. No, we're all pulling in the... No, we're not all pulling in the same direction. Jerry Taylor and his kike-loving clown crew are not pulling in the same direction as VNN and genuine white nationalism. They're winos. They and the conservatives will be rejected. And if they can't allow principle to overcome personality, they might as well move back to Britain, where that stuff all started. Where principled arguments are looked upon with disfavor. Well, we'll muddle through. We prefer the experimental approach. We don't like to actually think, plan, execute in line with our principles. This is one real thing that you don't realize. I mean, I did study abroad in Germany, and I saw what you see there is these Mensas. That's where they serve the students. And outside of the Mensas, you see these card tables and such stacked with political literature, and 90% of it's pure Marxist, from what I could tell, at least at the one I was at, Marburg, which was a very, very left-wing university. But the point is, these people are serious and principled, and they don't want to argue stuff. It's not all happy, but it's politics is kind of war light. So ultimately, it's about blood and seriousness. It's not about this lying, grinning. Think of Joe Biden grinning, that horrible... Well, it's not horrible. It's actually pretty funny. That giant, resplendent, Arctic glacier snow bouncing off it, denture grin that he has. I mean, that's Anglo-American, glad-handing, backhanding, happy-slappy, you know, grinning, nice, ick. And that is what has even cowed and influenced our own intellectuals who ought to know, but you don't have a Jew blurb your book while you're trying to teach about the problems Jews have caused. You draw a goddamn line between Jews and whites. That's the right way to do it. You utterly, utterly undercut your message when you do something that symbolizes, oh yeah, Jews are part of our, there's good Jews and bad Jews, I make distinctions. They don't make distinctions between us. They want us all gone. This is obvious stuff. I shouldn't have to say it. But when you combine that kind of tactical foolishness with this out overt theft of ideas, failure to acknowledge, refusal to acknowledge, pathetic, utterly pathetic. You ought to be ashamed of yourself, whoever the hell you are over there. Ought to be ashamed of yourself. Now, Loxism, a term of my creation, although very possibly found in Tacitus, Loxism is a mirror to racism. You can't fight something you can't even name, and there's two levels of can't name. One, you're censored from naming, versus the other, you don't even have a word for it. It's obvious that Jewish hatred motivates most of the laws now passed in the U.S., most of the policies, and most of the jibber-jabber you see on TV. It's Jewish hatred of whites that's driving this allowing the invasion from Mexico and the Third World, that's sending white males abroad to die, that's depicting white women as stupid, brainless sluts on TV, fit only for mixing with niggers, and white males as wimpy, weak, foolish, and useless, the butt bearing the burden, as I put it. That's obviously driven by hatred, and yet that hatred has no name. Well, you know, if you're trying to resist that hatred, and the people who set up the system that prospers it, well, you need to have a name. Well, the name of the people doing it are Jews. We got that. We're just afraid to use it, most of us. Jewish people. They're not Jewish people. They're Jews. Don't you see that some possibly malevolent force has set up the universe to give them that kind of a name? Like all of their clever verbalism and their clever affirmative action. Yes, 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 for discriminating. Somehow they neglected to rename themselves. Now, of course, it's true, like with fags or queers or inverts, no matter what name they try to take, we're gay. Well, you sure are, buddy. No matter what name they take on, we'll take a foul odor because of their behavior. We'll disperfume it. Nevertheless, when you have a classic word like Jew, you use it. They're not Jewish people, they're Jews. They Jew people. Did you get, I got Jewed. Bob, I got Jewed. I don't mind telling you, it was bad. Bad news. You got a word like that, you use it. Now you need a word for the hatred they have for us, whites. Loxism. Loxist. Same number of syllables. A perfect mirror term to racism. Racism itself was created by a Jew, by Trotsky, out of nothing. And yet all the weakling conservatives, the weakling Catholics, use it as though it's a perfectly acceptable term. It's a word that is purely intended to censor and to attack and to defame. Ordinary words are used to communicate ideas rather than hide them. Jews are the flip side of humanity. They are the devil's children. They use words to confuse, to mislead, to seduce, or to deceive. Pfft. they coined racism as an attack on white people. And I think it's Bob Whitaker says, anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. And he points out, you know, they don't want any diversity in colored lands. Diversity only applies to white lands. It certainly doesn't apply to Israel or the Philippines or Mexico or China or Nigeria. It only applies to white lands. Australia, France, Germany, Russia, U.S., Britain. This deliberate desire to lie about what's going on to whites, say, oh, whites have unique privilege in this country. We need to unpack their bag of white privilege. Okay, let's see what's in there. Discrimination against whites. Okay, it doesn't seem like a privilege to me, but how about continual media mocking? Oh, whites got short dicks. Ah, they're wimpy. Ah, you know, they're deadbeat dads. And endless barrage of insults. So at the same time they insult us, they say that we benefit from privilege. What's the privilege in being discriminated against and mocked? Wouldn't that be racism if it was directed against blacks or Jews? Wouldn't it be anti-Semitism? Of course it would. Of course there's a double standard. Well, who's the double standard? It's coming from Jews, not from liberals, not from secularists, not from WASP, not from the managerial state, not from managers, not from technocrats. It's coming from Jews. That is the source of it. These are the driving force behind this garbage. The impetus, the main motor, the spring, the hostile, hateful energy. It's Jews. Who do they hate? They hate us. What's the name of that? It's Loxism. It's Loxist. It's a Loxist commercial, WAMU, showing a hip, young, cool nigger with a pen of elderly, ridiculous white men, white bankers, and not a Semitic profile among them. That's Loxism. Well, no one else uses it, so how can it be real? Yeah, you're a fucking guppy. No one else uses it. I used it. I made it up. It definitely exists. What? You can't see apart from the crowd? If they don't, what are you, a girl? That's how women are. They do whatever other women do. They think whatever other women, they think whatever authority tells them. Can you not perceive what's going on? Take the right action against it? That's what men do. Men don't use their opponent's terms. That's acceding to domination, because short of physical violence, all there is word warfare, word battles. You don't use your enemy's terms that were specifically devised to put you on the losing end of a battle. Either you're in the good camp, or you're a homophobe, you're a racist, you're an anti-Semite. There's no word for anyone in the middle who simply doesn't agree with the Jewish agenda, but is still healthy and normal morally. You notice every one of their terms is loaded and is intended to produce a polarizing split between the good guys and the bad guys. And what they've taught the mass of morons to do through mass education is to categorize their enemies and call that thinking. So if David Duke goes on a show and says, you know, blacks, niggers are raping 40,000 white women a year, white men are raping basically zero black women, they go, that's racist. And because they've gone to 20 years of public school and a stupid college, they think that they're thinking. The Jews have taught you to think that you're thinking when you use one of their specially devised adjectives or nouns. And you've swept true, genuine, Aryan, white, logical, reasoned argument into one of their five or six garbage pails. Then that's racist. Oh, yeah, I am the shit. I am the bee's knees. That's racist. That's anti-Semitic. It's like a game for retarded babies. And yet it seems to satisfy about 98% of the seemingly adult or physically adult population. But it's not thinking. It's highly injurious to the kind of society and civilization we want to live in. Well, then let us understand the game and fight them on their own terms. And they're certainly not merely going to downplay words that describe them accurately. They're going to try to pretend that there is no downside, that they don't exist as a group, certainly not even a group with interest. Anytime some name comes into disfavor as a result of their behavior, why they try to downplay it or use one of their already preloaded terms, to whack down anybody who speaks against them, so that as the term neocon fell into disfavor, the Jews who were the neocons, who founded it and gave it its ideas, started saying, well, if you talk about neocons, you're an anti-Semite. This is how they work. They attack their enemies with smears. They never use reason or argument, because their agenda is the agenda of the tiny, hated, hostile 2%, and they're going after the true interests of the 98%. The only way you can successfully pull that kind of a campaign off is by controlling the mass media. So I say Jews are the only ones who control the mass media, or need to. And see, you who haven't read don't know that I'm taking something from Twain there and twisting it slightly. But I tell you because I'm honest. I don't write for the Occidental Observer. I'm honest. I'm not stealing ideas that belong to someone else. I'm borrowing them with attribution. I thought that's what scholars were supposed to do. Be a man. Don't be a chicken shit. Don't be a conservative. Don't be a wino. Don't support those who are. Wino being white in name only. Oh, yeah. Well, you how come no one else has coined a term for those who pretend to be pro-white, yet in effect are merely pro-Jewish? Hitler said, if you're not being attacked every day in the press by the Jews, then you're not getting the job done. He said the man who is most attacked by the Jews is the one who is doing the right thing. So by that standard, people like Jerry Taylor are not pro-white, because the Jews never attack them. Why? Because they are providing a bolt hole, a safety net. They are providing an asylum and reservation for Jews. Jews created all these problems, and as a certain segment of the white community becomes aware of those problems and even comes to attribute it to the proper cause, the Jews, they need a place to run to, at least theoretically, or at least potentially. That's what the rise of the wino is all about. People like Eon Jobling at Inverted World, Jared Taylor at Amron, they are not there to help whites. They are there to protect Jews. That must be understood. And so we need a name for that phenomenon, which is on the rise at the same time as the white nationalist case makes its way deeper and deeper, seeps into the conservative publications, the paleoconservative publications. The minute they let their thumb off and they stop censoring comments, the white nationalist case dominates. Because we are right. We are the ultimate conclusion of conservative thinking. Although we are not conservatives. Conservative, the right has always been associated, even though that itself is kind of a Jewy term coming out of the French Revolution. Right, essentially either you're based in realism and factual objectivity, or you're based in fantasy. Fantasy is the left, reality is the right. But that doesn't mean they can't be intermixed, or that the right can only go be realistic about certain things. It certainly can be. The co-opted right is realistic about certain things. That's what makes it appeal to the bourgeois, the upper middle class, the middle class stratum in the U.S., because it is realistic about taxes and this and that and the other. So it might be only half as bad as the left, or only as bad on certain things and better on others. And this stuff fools the people. What you want is the whole thing. Start with the racial reality, and that's white nationalism. You can't build a first world nation out of a mix of first world Aryans and third world scum. Plenty of these right-wing Jews know it, but they know that it's good for Jews to pretend that you can. So, we can hardly win the day or get our case out there without naming the enemy and what he's up to. When someone's a Jew, we call him on it. We've made that famous, name the Jew. Where that came from us. Name the Jew. We've made it known net-wide as a stigmata of cowardice if you're unwilling to name the Jew. That's why we're so careful about calling only those Jews who are Jews. You understand? It's the conservatives who want to pretend that it's some force other than Jews that are causing these problems. And you see, they can't pull that off plausibly, because if the Jews were one of a number of things, even they can't deny the Jews are at least one of a number of the things causing these problems, but they never call the Jews at all to task for what they've done. They don't even allow them in as a minor influence on this stuff, and that's the dog that didn't bark. Or the kike that didn't wheeze. When you're reading Jude, and we have it from them in their own words. You know, we have it from John Derbyshire. We have him saying, yeah, I can't say anything critical of Jews. I'd never work again. Never draw a paycheck if I criticize Jews. He admitted that to Juicy.com, a Jew magazine. So this is the gelded right. These are the whites who have passed under the yoke, the white skins who have passed under the yoke. Yeah, in exchange for money, I will push the Jewish agenda, and I don't even mind admitting it. I'm a coward. I'm a slave. A slave is one, said the Greek, who cannot speak his mind. John Derbyshire can't speak his mind, and he's willing to play by those rules. Of course, he is British, so one doesn't expect much. But we who would be free must strike the blow themselves. Who said that? I think it was Shelley. Striking that blow is done with violence, with a sword, and it's done with a pen. And when it's done with a pen, it means you name things and attribute them to their causes, and you describe them accurately. And if the term doesn't exist, but it's there in reality, then you have to create a term and let the best term win. And generally, the market responds pretty quickly. If you come up with a name for something that doesn't exist, you put it out there, and it works, you know, great. If it doesn't work, then it slides into disuetude. Not all new coinings work, but reality is ever-changing, and the terms need to reflect that. And when the people who are the power that be try to prevent reality from being acknowledged because it runs against their agenda, then we who are on the side of reality and the people getting screwed by the powers that be have to be doubly careful to call things by their right name. The least we can do, since we have problems, we have a meta problem, and then we have our own internal problem. The problems are the obvious. They're education, crime, you know, crisis, global crisis, change, war in Iraq, what have you. Those are problems. The meta problem is we can't deal with any of them honestly because our enemy controls the high points. He controls the mass media. That's a political technical problem. But to the extent we can deal with that virtually online on the internet through the one mass medium we do have, our other problem is, our workaday problem is coming up with the right names for our opponents, our enemies, and what they're up to. And we at VNN are far in advance of everybody else in this regard. We are the ones who said, name the Jew. We are the ones who have coined the term Loxism. We are the ones who have come up with Ameriquois for the society that has been produced in the United States under Zog. Zog referring to the political machinery, the Zionist occupation government we've labored under for at least the last 40 years, since 1965 roughly, when the Jew communists completed their takeover, as evident in the passage of all these numerous acts that were promoted as liberation, but were in fact the enslavement of our kind. So all the recognition of what's going on, this is a very important political thing. It's a matter, it's really a first duty, is to call things by their name. And if the name doesn't exist, we have to create it. If the name exists but people are afraid to use it because it's a taboo, we have to bust that taboo. That's what we've done with Name the Jew. If the term doesn't exist for this neo-America, this neo-Bolshevist, Judeo-Bolshevist America, we invent it. Ameriquois. Boom. Works. Great. Everyone uses it. Why? Because it reflects something real. And if we use American standards, then the Jews can say, oh, you're anti-American if you oppose what America has become. No, we oppose what you made it. There was nothing wrong with America before Jews took it over. Well, there was something wrong, evidently, if Jews were able to come in and take it over. But we make the distinction by using a new term to reflect a new reality. That's how it's done. That's how politics is battled out, short of bloodshed. Who understand? Very few people understand this. You know why that is? Because they're Aryans. They take things at face value. That's one of the fundamental failings of our race. I mean, we're almost as bad as niggers in some way. Authority is right. Ultimately, you know, I know, you know, sometimes they make mistakes, but I think ultimately their heart is on the right side. And you know what? I'm going to use their terms and I'm going to go along with it. Most people are biologically like that. They can't be otherwise. It's useless to get too angry at them. You understand this? Do you understand what I'm saying? So we who can must come up with the terms. And if you can't come up with the terms, then acknowledge the best one and use it yourself, regardless of where the term originated. And you know what? Here's where this false pride comes in. Because I came up with these terms, some of these clowns won't use it. I'm not a PhD. Some people think I'm not a very nice guy. Maybe I'm kind of rude. Maybe I swear a lot. You know what? If I can do it better than anyone else, you need to use what I've done and you need to attribute it to me. And you need to quit being an asshole about it. It really disappoints me. It's ignoble and un-Aryan not to acknowledge shit that's good out there. The term Zog, I didn't invent the term Zog, but I use it. Why do I use it? Because objectively, it's the right term. It's the right term for our government and that overt political machinery that runs this stuff. It's run by a bunch of goddamn Zionists. I know that whether it's Barack Obama or John McCain who's in there, it's going to be a Jewish agenda served, and it's going to be advanced and defended in Jew-created terms and with Jew-created arguments devised by Jew speechwriters, because that's how it works. Zog is very highly appropriate. And when I use, at the same time that I use terms that acknowledge and advance, that acknowledge reality that the Jews would prefer to suppress, I also must look to explain to my fellow whites why most of the terms that they are using were coined by the ADL or some other Jewish organization in order to put them on the defensive. And as I've said, and now we'll switch into a slightly different gear, this goes to a far deeper level than you might imagine, as I've said. And this is a pretty fair insight. I mean, think of mucking the stables, you know, and think of your mind as a honeycomb. Into this mind from birth has been poured material into that honeycomb. Where does it come from? Well, it's come from TV, it's come from your preacher, it's come from your pulpit, it's come from your president, it's come from your, you know, high school teachers, your teachers and the mass media. And my argument has always been, on every issue or about every term of which you've not seriously pondered, on which you've not seriously considered, you will have adopted the Judeo-Bolshevist position and terminology by default. You understand? Because that's how extensive this propaganda, and to use another term coined by my original partner, proposphere. Proposphere, self-explanatory, Ameriqua, self-explanatory. The best terms are oral. They work in your ear. That's even more important than your eye. What a lot of intelligent people try to do is coin words that only work visually. That's not as good as terms that work orally. Ameriqua sounds like what we're being managed dash evolved into. It sounds like the jungle. It sounds African. It sounds very unwhite. It sounds very fake pseudo-y. Gets that combination of quasi and jungle. You know, wait a minute. We're not a bunch of Jew-led wiggers, are we? That's America. That's not America. We don't want the Jew-nigger bullshit. I hate DC Jews. I hate Congo niggers. But I like pygmy. Stuff's tasty. Point is, politics is an ongoing verbal struggle. And when our opponents have all of the high ground, that is the satellite transponder locations, we have to work doubly hard to get the right skins on things, call things by the right name, acknowledge them as soon as they appear. We acknowledge and come up with a memorable term for what they're doing or for the way they try to trick us. That's why I've gone over and over. In every show I talk about, oh, racism, did you know where racism originates? Yeah, it came out of the pen of a nigger communist. Why do we treat it like it's a real word? Why don't we treat it as what it is? It's not a word that deals with some objective reality. It's an attack on our kind. Pretending to be objective. That's what Jews always do. They always pretend to be universalist in their drives. They pretend to be objective in what they're saying. But they're not. It's always a mask for selfish interests. It's funny. I've been talking about Occidental Observer and saying some serious things about it. And one thing I've always wondered about McDonald is why he never quoted the guy whose book woke me up. And in fact, although it doesn't take the same position that's implicit in McDonald, which is hostility to the Jews for what they're doing, it covers a lot of the same ground. Ordeal of Civility by John Murray Cuddy. I always wonder why that book was never cited in McDonald, because it says a lot of the same stuff that he does, except it says it 20, 30 years earlier. And he specifically points out, and this blew me away, this was what woke me up, was like, holy Christ. this guy, basically Freud is saying that like all the things you, America, you, the White West, don't like about the Jew, they're not really about the Jew. They're about symptoms that everybody has. Everybody has. The Jews maybe show them a little more, but we all have it. It's all due to repression, you understand. I was like, whoa, that's fucking wild. So he's trying to turn, there's a positive and a negative. He's saying the negative stuff, if Jews do it and it's negative, it's not because they're Jews. If Jews do it and it's positive, well, they're doing it for everybody else. Or if there's some cause that Jews are pushing that's specifically good for Jews and bad for us, the Jews will always advance it under a universalist cover. They'll try to give us credit for their flaws, and they'll try to claim their interest is really in our interest. You see? So, heads you win, tails they can't lose. Everything they do is calculated either to hide their sins or to advance their interest. And in both cases, they have to do it by fooling you, by telling you that the evidence of your own eyes is wrong and must be discounted. And, send your kid to a public school and have him sign a certificate, right? Have your five-year-old in kindergarten or sign some certificate that he's not going to use the word gay critically. This is a way we whites can fight back. We have the internet and we have the mass playgrounds. And Brutus was saying that he tells kids, yeah, turn Jew into an epithet like gay, like kids call everything gay. The homos, who along with the Jews are writing the laws, want to ban all of this. That's why it's more important than ever to use whatever outlets we have. Get people to associate Jew and fag with bad stuff. They already do, but just encourage the use. It's just on VNN Forum, we need to be a little more specific. When we call someone a Jew, it has to carry weight. They have to be a Jew. If they're acting like a Jew, but they're not a Jew, say they're acting Jewy. And that led to another coinage. Someone posed, well, why don't you come up with a name for calling them? So this came to me inadvertently. I was like, yeah, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. But use G. If the person is not actually a Jew, then just use G. Call them a Jew, G-E-W, or a goo, due to their lack of backbone, G-E-W. I'm unfortunately going to be forced by nature to take a little break here. I will be right back. We'll play a couple more songs while I'm gone.
in an evening gown. You're carrying your shoe as you head back uptown, wearing shades to hide the mess that you've made of your mascara. Your piled up hair has all fallen down as the garbage trucks start coming around, picking up trash. Do you think you might ask for a ride? The apartment you left had no number, and the guy you were with had no name. And the sun is up in his wedding martini as you walk the walls of shame. Cab driver, but he don't know either, so you keep walking. The pavement you're pounding feels like your head last night kicked your ass. You're ready for bed. You let a bus pass and a stranger asks, are you okay? The apartment you left had no number, and the guy you were with had no name. And the sun is up, you're sweating martinis as you walk the walk of shame. As you walk,
as you walk,
as you walk the walk of shame.
All right, that was Walk of Shame by Truck Stop Honeymoon, preceded by Tenderness Extended Mix by General Public, which I recall from back in the day when I was a college freshman. Anyway, I got a little interrupted. I don't mean to be an asshole, but things piss me off. It really pissed me off when people pretending to represent the white cause act like chicken shit little Jews. It really pissed me off. Stop doing it. You know that guy? Don't be that guy. Man up if you're going to use someone else's ideas and admit to it. Don't be a putz. Be a schnorrer. Now, if you think the giant steaming turds are nearly as funny as airline peanuts, you might be a Jew! See, I can't do a very good Jeff Foxworthy, but yeah, someone, Andrew left a comment, Alex, in light of your intention to shed further light upon the Jew by reversing their mocking of so-called rednecks, I listed a few Jeff Foxworthy lines that you may agree with as you create your list. Yeah, and he's right. It's just, Andrew, the thing is they have to be funny. The ones you put they're right, they're correct, they fit, you've got the form, but it's got to be funny. It's not funny, it doesn't really work unless you're a super exceptional voiceist. I can do some voices, I can't do Foxworthy particularly well, but that may be just because I haven't practiced and I haven't heard him in a number of years. But I think actually the Foxworthy thing would work with Jew, it would work with nigger even better. And I've always meant to do that, but I've never sat down and written out about 20 good one-liners in the Foxworthy mold. But boy, the election of Obama, if that's what happens, would certainly be a good spur and inspiration to do just that. And of course, I welcome any lines. You can put them in the Radio Estina comment section at govnn.com. I wanted just to get back before I was rudely and bodily interrupted to discussing. So anyway, it occurred to me. Very much as the blinding light struck down the Jew Saul and his road there to Damascus. Yeah, the Damascene conversion here. You know, maybe you want to call a Goya Jew? Just use a G. Use a soft G. It's kind of breaks what I said earlier, but at least online, visually, it works to use Jew and to try to... Here's the thing. If it serves the interest of the Jews to deny a certain aspect of reality, they will. Now, they can hardly get by in the world not having a name themselves. So since the name of their group exists, the best they can do is downplay it or soften it or ameliorate it somehow. And the way they do that is by encouraging people to say Judeo-Christian tradition rather than Christian, call them the Jewish people rather than Jews. They don't want that nasty, direct, insecty kind of sound that Jew has. Jews. It sounds like a stepped-on slug, doesn't it? Oh, God. You know, I was wearing sandals, and I walked in the kitchen, and I walked outside, and I walked on the walk, and, you know, I couldn't tell, but, I accidentally stepped in a slug, and it juiced all over the place. Ugh. Nasty. A stepped-on slug is the sound of the word Jew. Very, very bad. I mean, if you were choosing up sides in fantasy politics, that would not be a term you would want associated with your side. It's a major hit. I think Aryan, noble, light, noble. Light brown, light blue is what I always think when I hear that word. Honorable, but Jew. Ew. You can't spell Jew without ew. Right? A disadvantage in that term, and use it. Use it against them. Call them Jewish people. Don't call them people. It's awfully presumptuous to call the Jews people. Call them Jews. Put Jew balls in your closet. Keep the ratty little Jews from eating your clothes. Jews. The sound of a stepped on slug. All slimy and eviscerated in a pool of its own mucoid nastiness. Hey, expiring on the sidewalk as it screams at being persecuted by your boot sole. Use what you got, and what you don't got, you make. The hatred these Jews ooze and ew and Jew, they all come from the Latin word for but if the word for Jew hatred of our kind doesn't exist, then we got to make it up. And not just make it up. We have to fight with it. That means using it. Get it out there. Force others to acknowledge reality as we see it by forcing them to deal with our terms. Not just our arguments, our terms. But these whites, are whites polite enough? Are they too polite to survive? Accepting things at face value, well, the political version of that is accepting your enemy's terms at face value. We're not racist. You don't argue like that. You're on the defensive. You've already lost. You attack. You attack only. It's not me saying that. It's winners saying that. That's what Goebbels said. That's what the Nazis said. You attack only. The Jew can tell 10 lies before the truth can get its boots on. 10 Jewish lies are already around the world in their mass media before the truth can get its boots on. You can't defend yourself from Jewish attacks. They will invent 10 a day. What you can do is attack them. That's the only thing that can work. This is just simple politics. This is politics 101. But in a society that has its roots in Britain, why, we overlook the delicts of others, the mistakes of others, the errors others make. And this positions us to be taken advantage of by people who will notice what we do, and they will notice our flaw, and they will press home that advantage against us. We can't be like the WASP and win. We have to be like the German nationalists. Don't allow the Jews to get away with anything, not in naming things, not in doing things. Tax them with their sick, foul, and twisted behavior. Tax them with the lies and assumptions and anti-white drives that lie buried in every single term they use. from deadbeat dad to racist, to homophobe, to misogynist. I mean, they invent some of these terms themselves, like racist, or they repurpose real words like misogynist or deadbeat. You understand? This is where the battle is, short of drawing blood. So if you're not prepared to draw blood, the least you can do is clean up your use of language and use white terms. Make the enemy play on your field. Don't play on his field. It's tilted to his advantage. So don't call whites who are not Jews, Jews. Call them sellouts. Call them traitors. Call them appeasers. Use all the language the bought and sold white neocon right, the Fox people, use in going after anyone who doesn't support their Jewish master's latest light up about war. And Fox calls people appeasers. She's the appeaser. She's the sellout. She's the traitor. And so someone said, why don't you think of a name for that? And in spite of myself, I didn't think it was, it came to me. I was like, all right. And it works on paper. It works on the internet. Call him a Jew. Call Ann Coulter a Jew. G-E-W. A goo or a Jew. However you want to pronounce it. If you're going to pronounce it, it's probably better to use goo. She's a dirty goo. Or read it as a Jew. Make clear that you mean G-E-W. A goyish. A goy Jew, as it were. Can it be a goy Jew? Well, it's a goy, but it's following the Jew agenda for personal profit, knowing what it's doing is wrong and against the interests of its kind, its race, its nation. It's selling out. All that embodied and encompassed by three little letters, G-E-W. A Jew with a soft G. I think that works. And thereby, with it, we create a new class of people. We don't have to say, these are people who are sellouts to the Jew. These are people who are traitor to their own kind by serving the Jew. We have one simple little word, Jew. It's more economical than anything else I could come up with. But it only works if we use it and spread it out there and force others to acknowledge that the phenomenon the word describes exists, because they would prefer to pretend that's not the case. They want to play it as though Ann Coulter is a wonderful, heroic patriot, or Sean Hannity, or Rush Limbaugh, or Bill O'Reilly. Wonderful patriots. We want to force our reality on them, which is that she and they are sellouts, appeasers, tools of the Jew. They are Jews. They are goos. No spine, sell out for their own interests. Get their fellow whites killed to advance Israel's agenda. Crucial stuff to understand here. We're talking about. So, Loxism and Jew are two new coinages. Loxism is years old already. And, you know, like I said, the guy at the Occidental Observer saying, oh, we need to come up with a name. Yeah, bud, I said that like 10 years ago. And I came up with a name because no one else came up with a better name. And I would have been willing to use it if someone had. No one did. And Loxism specifically mirrors racism and is even better a word than racism. It merely lacks repetition and mass media amplification. We're whites. We're creative. We're more creative than the Jews. They're not going to be able to come up with any term that I can't come up with a better one for. Rest assured on that. But we have to use it, and we don't have the power to amplify our terms, superior though they might be, against their network. But we have to do what we can. That's what fighting for our interest means. Doesn't mean like the conservatives, oh, whatever the Jew's term is for the bad guy, oh, I'm not that. If you think like that, you're a loser. Retrain your thinking. Don't defend yourself. You don't require any defense. There's nothing wrong with you. Don't allow yourself to be guilted or intimidated. Fight. They are the bad guys. You are the good guys. We are the good guys. Fuck them and up with us. Don't ever allow yourself to be put in a defensive position, Attack them. Don't be nice. Attack them. And if you're on our side, treat others with respect. Credit their ideas, even if they don't have the educational degrees you think they ought to have. If they've done the right thing, credit them. If they came up with it, attribute it to them. Don't be a pussy about it. Those concerned for their respectability will never lead you. Not anywhere good, anyway. The only place they will lead you is into writing a check to their 501c3 foundation, and perhaps, just maybe, since that's where all their efforts ever end at, that's their real goal. You ever think about that? Perhaps people taking advantage of the corrupt system's tax laws don't really want to end that system. Enough on that head. Now let's move on to the final subject. I guess we've already gone 2 hours. I was going to stop, but I want to keep going. We'll now turn and talk about Jewish organizations not so much subverting as getting their agenda into non-Jewish student material. Of course, we know how they do this through the public schools. They do it through the Department of Education and the writer's guidelines for the textbooks. Public school textbooks are produced by 4 or 5 companies. Anyway, the specific article is how the NCEA promotes the ADL agenda. And someone's offering me suggestions. I can't talk about it now, but the reason for the GEW is because it picks up on the G and the Goyim and the Gentile, which if you use any J or ZH, you're just thinking of Jew proper, because it's Jid in Russian for Yid, or Yiddish for, or Yud for Jew in German. You got to get to the G, which gets to the Goy part of it. I just don't think those other ones will work, because people are going to think of Jews. They're not going to think of Goyish Jews. Whereas GEW is shocking enough that you're like, what is that? It's a Jew, but it's not a Jew. My opinion. Anyway, what I'm going to talk about now is Culture Wars article. Go to culturewars.com. That's E. Michael Jones's outfit. Of course, we've referred to him a million times on earlier Radio Astinas. And what he has here is the way that the National Catholic Education Association, I don't know if infiltrated is the right word, but they're promoting Holocaust agitprop. And this article is about that. Actually, I'm not sure who wrote this, but it appears in Jones's magazine, culturewars.com. Thanks, Gregor. Anyway, I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm going on with this, and this will be the end. We'll go for, I don't know, 30-40 minutes. It's a little bit of an article. It's not as long as most of his articles, but it's worth talking about, just to see how the Jews are always pushing on every front to get their agenda advanced, even in your own private religious materials. Whoever wrote this says, "I've never been to a convention of the National Catholic Education Association. After the publication of this paper, I suspect I'll not be getting any invitations to address that meeting." The NCEA, National Catholic Education Association, is the professional association for Catholic educators. Its employees, like everyone associated with the Catholic schools, work hard in chronically underfunded and understaffed environments. The results are often well-intentioned but mediocre. Anyway, he has something about ACRE, Aker test. The test is allegedly an objective standardized assessment of religious knowledge and attitudes. It is given in many dioceses as a requirement for a school's certification as a Catholic school. The content part of the high school test is, by objective standards of testing and measurement, invalid. Moreover, the same test questions have been used in the evaluation for the past decade over and over again, compromising the integrity of the test itself. If SAT or ACT people ran their testing the way that ACRE people do, A-C-R-E, I guess that's a Catholic religious accreditation equivalent of the SAT or ACT, there would be critical documentaries on every TV network. The effort is pathetic at best. So they're kind of running a half-assed, underfunded deal. And the writer says, the NCEA does what it can with the limited resources it can muster. Apparently, there's no way it can afford to do testing and measurement in a first-class way. But at least the ACRE test, even if it gives unreliable and misleading results, isn't misleading Catholic students. By contrast, when the NCA turned over to the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, the task of educating Catholic teachers about the Holocaust, however, they appear to have, intentionally or not, let the fox loose in the henhouse. The ADL distributed bearing witness materials to participants in the June 6-8, 2006 workshop of the same name in Houston, Texas, with no apparent mention of the fact that it is, after all, the ADL that has for many years led the drumbeat demanding that the church give up converting Jews to Catholicism. So the ADL comes to the NCEA, the Catholic Educational Association, with its bearing witness materials. And the Catholics say, okay, yeah, we'll have our teachers taught that. ADL members routinely are involved in the campaign against Pope Pius XII. The ADL chairman, Abraham Foxman, demands that the prayers for the conversion of Jewish people, why not say Jews, be eliminated from the Latin prayers in the 1962 Good Friday service. Thus, when our Archdiocesan Department of Catholic Schools announced early in 2008 that Oblate School of Theology would be the site of an ADL-sponsored three-day bearing witness trademarked program, I was curious enough to ask for the materials that would be presented. My objective was to review them to make certain our teachers were not being subjected to anti-Catholic propaganda that would make its way downstream to our students. Subtitle: the ADL website. According to the ADL website, the Bearing Witness program is a unique professional development opportunity for... Oh, have I got a deal for you? That is cloth, it's not at all rotten. Jewish peddling, now they're peddling cloth, now they're peddling bad ideas, they're peddling nostrums, elixirs, they're here what ails you. Alright. According to the ADL website, the Bearing Witness program is a unique professional development opportunity for Catholic school educators. In 1996, the ADL's Washington, D.C. regional office created Bearing Witness to provide Catholic school educators with the training and resources necessary to teach their students about the historical relationship between Jewish and Catholic communities and the impact of that relationship on Catholic teaching, catechesis, or I'm not sure how that's pronounced, or if it's a catechesis and liturgy. Through Bearing Witness, participants explore the history of anti-Semitism from biblical times to modern day. See, again, teaching the history of where's the history of Jewish hate? Where's the history of Loxism? 2,000 years of hate. 2,000 years of Loxism, bearing witness to the hatred Jews have for whites, whether instigating world wars or chopping up a kid to use his blood for their matzah. 2,000 years of Loxism. National Conference of Jewish Educators. Think they'd laugh at you if you tried to get your material put into their teacher training programs. They would kick you out the door. They'd call the cops and report you for anti-Semitism. Why do we take shit from Jews? They have nothing to offer us. Through Bearing Witness, participants explore the history of anti-Semitism from biblical times to modern day. Themes include the role of the church during the Holocaust, recent changes in Catholic teachings on Jews and Judaism, issues of prejudice in contemporary society, and practical strategies for teaching students about the Holocaust and anti-Semitism. Bearing Witness is endorsed by the National Catholic Educational Association, NCEA, and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Quote, in 2000, Bearing Witness was one of 15 programs across the country to receive recognition by the NCEA as a SPICE program, That's an acronym for Selected Programs for Improving Catholic Education. You can improve Catholic education by pulling in Jewish bullshit political dogma about how they're persecuted victims. SPICE is a process that identifies, validates, and systematically disseminates elementary and secondary school programs so that teachers and administrators in other schools can adopt them. Since its inception, Bearing Witness has trained over 1,000 Catholic school educators across the country. So 1,000 plus Catholic teachers have been exposed to this Jewish garbage called Bearing Witness and trademarked by the ADL. In 1998, it became an ADL nationally sponsored program, and ADL regional offices, of which there are, basically it's a mirror organization to the FBI, so about as many offices as the FBI has located around the country, the ADL has offices, and they coordinate with the FBI to oversee that the goyim, the stupid cattle, aren't doing anything to get out of their pens. So, in 1998, the Bearing Witness became an ADL nationally sponsored program, and ADL regional offices began replicating the program in 2002. As feature stories on National Public Radio and the Washington Post, both of those are basically Jew-owned entities, NPR may be public, but basically everybody on NPR is a Jew. Washington Post is owned by Jews, have demonstrated Bearing Witness is a highly visible program as well as one of lasting importance. So the Jews use their fellow Jews to promote this program they prepared for Catholics to mislead their teacher as to the nature of Jew-Catholic interactions. The original program apparently began to accomplish ADL's objectives, which we will examine shortly, and so they put together what one might call a graduate program to tie the Holocaust studies more closely with the Zionist movement. So maybe the fundamentalist, no-necked Baptist Zionist bastards aren't enough. They want to turn Catholics into Zionists, too, by creating Bearing Witness and a graduate Bearing Witness program, in effect. The website goes on, Bearing Witness Advanced, their gold program, is a unique professional development opportunity for Catholic school educators from across the U.S. Due to the overwhelming success of the original Bearing Witness, not available in most shops, only over TV, of the original Bearing Witness program, a result of the joint partnership between the ADL, the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, that is, a museum in the physical territory of the U.S. dedicated to imaginary atrocities, thousands of miles away on a different continent, U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, the ADL, for a limited time only, and the Archdiocese of Washington offer this unique professional development opportunity. So an advanced course of study, the gold package, let's call it, was put in the Goldman package. You want the Goldman and Silverman, and if you still have lingering anti-Semitism, maybe you need to upgrade to the Goldman package. Guaranteed to remove 99.44% of your anti-Semitism. The small fee will come back yearly to make sure you have no reinfections, kind of like termites. And that's how they do it, you know. This extension of Bearing Witness, which allows educators the opportunity to extend their learning or their indoctrination, includes a trip to Israel, where participants in, you know, guess who pays for that? The U.S. taxpayers pay for that. That's what all of our billions of dollars to Israel, part of that is recycled to bring people over there and tell them the sob story. Get them on the side of the Jews rather than the Palestinians they stole their land from with our imprimatur. Where in Israel, when they take these Catholics over there, like they fly over journalists and they fly over local police chiefs, participants hear from resident scholars and are afforded the chance to visit sites sacred to Jews and Christians. Participants are graduates of regional Bearing Witness programs held across the nation. The program begins with 3 days at St. Mary's Seminary and University in Baltimore, where participants hear lectures and take part in discussions which focus on such topics as the Holocaust, hermeneutics, that is, interpretation, reconciliation and repentance, and the meaning of Israel to the Jewish people. Typically, this is a quote, typically while in Israel, educators visit Yad Vashem, Israel's official memorial to the Holocaust, and hear from religious and government leaders, including the Papal Nuncio, the head of the Catholic community in Israel, kibbutz members, an Arab affairs correspondent from the Jerusalem Post, and the director of the Interfaith Encounter Association. The realities of life, of daily life in Israel, are brought home with visits to the security fence in the Golan Heights. In addition, participants are afforded the opportunity to attend Mass at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and the Mount of the Beatitudes. They visit holy sites in the Galilee and throughout the Old City of Jerusalem, where they experience a tour of the Western Wall Tunnel and hear from the head archaeologist of the Israel Antiquity Authority. Always a highlight is celebrating Shabbat with an Israeli family in the holy city of Safed. The mention of the holy city of Safed, and I'm guessing at the pronunciation of that, gives away the intention of the Bearing Witness Project. Safed, the highest city in Zionist Israel, is not holy because of some connection to the Jewish scriptures or even any Jewish history prior to the Crusades. Safed is the historical center of the Jewish Kabbalah, best known these days as Madonna's religion. The Kabbalah is kind of you've got the Kabbalah, and then you've got Freemasonry is kind of Kabbalah for goy dummies. Kabbalah is kind of numerology. Though 90% Arab before 1948, a bloody battle in that first Palestinian war drove all the Arabs out, leaving it 99% Jewish. Thus, Safed is a trophy of Zionism and an emblem of Talmudic Kabbalist Judaism. During this tour, the various interpreters of the Holy Land are, except for the Papal Nuncio, agents of the Zionist establishment. This is the John Hagee Israel for the Zionist tour without the mass baptisms in the Upper Jordan or the excursion to an IDF fortress. Hagee, of course, is the, I believe, Texas-based Christian fundamentalist who raises money for Israel and serves as their apologist among the no-necked Baptist morons who make up a large percentage of the southern states in the U.S. The Jews think he's ridiculous and hate him, but he raises a lot of money for them, so they like him in that regard. If one remembers that modern Judaism is built on two sacraments, existential contacts between a people and its ultimate reality, the Bearing Witness projects make more sense. The first sacramental encounter of modern Judaism with its existential reality is the Holocaust. The Holocaust, historically the mass enslavement and extermination of any race the Nazis considered inferior, and the Catholic just repeats another dogma here since none of that happened, has been appropriated as its property by the chief victims, European Jews. The world rightly considers the genocide of the Nazi period to be abhorrent. Of course, there was no genocide. There was no killing of Jews because they were Jews. The Catholic is simply repeating a Jewish lie, even in this traditionalist Catholic publication. What contemporary Judaism, and the reason they allow that lie to go forward, is because E. Michael Jones doesn't like Nazis any more than he likes Jews. So, he'll tell the truth about Jews insofar as it concerns the Catholic Church, but he will not tell the truth about Jews insofar as their lies about Nazis serve his cause, which is to undermine Nazis as well as Jews, and leave his own Catholics as the only standing contender for your mind share. What contemporary Judaism has subtly done over the past half century or so is to give the Jewish Shoah, the Shoah must go on, a special character, to make it for all time a unique genocide. Again, you know, the buried axiom here is that the genocide took place, but it didn't take place. There were no lamps made of human skin, there was no soap made of Jewish fat, and there were no gas chambers. Two of the three have been admitted to, even by the liars, nonpareil, the Jews themselves. The third will be admitted to in the next 50 years, I predict. They claim their Shoah to be somehow worse than the murder of Armenians by Muslim Turks, Ukrainians by Soviet communists, Cambodians by the Khmer Rouge, Biafrans by Muslim Nigerians, or the people of Darfur by Muslim Sudanians. The why of this need for singularity, and I think he's misusing that word, singularity, is its connection to the second Jewish sacrament, the Jewish State of Israel. First, a personal disclaimer, says the writer. My wife Carolyn was born almost exactly a month after the proclamation of the Jewish state in 1948, and in the midst of the first Jewish-Arab War. In 2005, we made a pilgrimage with Catholic and Orthodox guides through the Holy Land, Jordan, Israel, and the West Bank. The Zionists were not particularly pleased with our pilgrimage because our tour guides made a special effort to put us together with Palestinian Christians, many of whom had been victimized by Zionist land developers and all of whom had been injured by Zionist rules of movement. So what these Jew appeasers like Hagee don't tell you is that a lot of the Palestinians are actually Christians. And Christians like Hagee side with Jews against their own fellow Christians. Interesting. But the two-week journey, a time of spiritual renewal, had only one real time of confrontation when Carolyn's passport was lifted by the Israeli authorities as we attempted to re-enter Jordan, and our pilgrimage group was detained for no reason for an hour as the Zionists made it clear to us who were the real authorities in the Holy Land. Some years before, after decades of Zionist propaganda, we had been partial to the claims of the Israelis. After seeing them in action and praying at the real Wailing Wall, the one they call a security fence, we began to comprehend the radical injustices symbolized by the Israeli flag. Of course, the official party line in Israel is that because of the suffering of the Jewish people in the Holocaust, Jews deserve their own state in Palestine. Moreover, to avoid a second Shoah, the state of Israel has a right to do whatever it must to protect its land and people. Radical elements in Israel and outside it, like John Hagee, press that point further. All Jews should return to Israel and all non-Jews should be expelled from that land. The physical land of Israel belongs to Jews by right forever. There is a lengthy passage in Pope Benedict's excellent book, Jesus of Nazareth, that helps us understand Jesus' Beatitudes. As he writes about the sentence, "Blessed are the meek, for they will possess the land," Benedict explains the connection between meekness and possessing the land. A land is holy, we might reflect, only if it is a land of obedience to the will of God. The meek are those who trust in the Lord's authority and do His will rather than their own. The Lord expelled the Canaanite inhabitants of Palestine, we read in the prophetic books, because they were self-willed, the opposite of meek. They defied the natural law through their idolatry, sacred prostitution, sorcery, sodomy, and the oppression of the weak. The Israelite community retained title to the physical land of Palestine only so long as they kept the commandments, as they maintained the holiness of the land. It is clear that the first expulsion of the Jews, chronicled in 2 Kings 17 and 2 Chronicles 36, was seen as a response to the Jews' abuse of their authority, of their acting as the nations, that is, the non-Jewish nations, had done. Later on, during the Maccabean period, the woes of the Jews were attributed by the author of Daniel to Jewish faithlessness. Jesus, in the words recorded in MT, I'm not sure what that is. I think of which Bible verse that, or Bible book that is, MT 23:26, or I guess Matthew, accused the Jewish leaders, scribes and Pharisees, of the same kind of disobedience, but this time he accused them of using the law of God to cover up their wrongdoing. When he predicted the destruction of the Jewish nation, it was the same kind of prophetic sentence that the Israelites had heard from Elijah, Amos, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and others. The Jewish leaders of the first century were not meek, not obedient. They did not deserve the land. They lost it to the Romans in their day as their ancestors had lost it to the Babylonians and the Greeks. So, the Jews claim they have this right by covenant, but it was given to them, if you want to believe that stuff, which I don't, under certain laws, which they then abrogated, so they lost their claim to it. They lost their claim to the title, so even on their own terms, it doesn't make any sense. They have no right to modern-day Palestine. The Holy Father helps us see beyond the physical expulsion, however. In the various exiles of the Jewish communities, whether by force or by choice, a Jewish diaspora was established. Jews erected synagogues wherever they lived, wherever 10 or more men could form a congregation. These were centers of Jewish worship and study, extensions of the Holy Land throughout the known world. This would be around the Mediterranean. St. Paul himself grew up and studied in the synagogue at Tarsus, in the south of what is now known as Turkey. These reproductions of Eretz Israel were called to be centers of meekness and obedience, therefore. After Paul's conversion, they became focal points of his three missionary journeys. That is, Saul converting to Paul, the Jew Saul on the road to Damascus converting to the Christian Paul, and then going off on missionary journeys
Paul and his companions would go first to the local synagogue, preach the messianic fulfillment in Jesus crucified, attract a few converts, and usually suffer Jewish and pagan persecution. The notion of the meek Jesus as the Messiah, reigning from the cross despite his powerlessness, was a scandal to pagan and Jew alike, but resonated with those called to the truth. That's his Catholic view of things. The house churches of Christians grew out of these evangelistic efforts. Evangelism means spreading the good news of the gospel. These house churches became the new Israel, the new land of obedience and meekness. The Eucharist is celebrated throughout the earth because this meek Lord Jesus is to reign from sea to sea. Quote, every Eucharistic assembly is for us Christians a place where the King of Peace reigns. Thus the whole world is meant by God to be a land of holiness, of obedience, and the church is called to be the new Israel. So this is the doctrine of supersessionism. The Jews broke their covenant with the Lord, and the Christians took up the new covenant. It superseded the old covenant. You understand? So the church, that is the Catholic Church, is the new Israel. This, of course, is why, despite propaganda to the contrary and predictions by Abraham Foxman, the Pope refuses to stop the church praying for the conversion of the Jews to Jesus, their Messiah, and ours. So he's just traced the spiritual roots of this policy the Jews seek to change through their dogma they're inflicting on these Catholics through their professional educational association. There are not two covenants, but one, fulfilled in Jesus Christ. To stop praying for the conversion of our, quote, elder brothers, unquote, is to stop loving the Jews, individually and collectively. And it's important that you understand this, although, of course, to anyone who's not a part of this, it's ridiculous. Jews are not unconverted Christians. They are a biological species that is different from whites and hostile to them and competes with them. The Christian view is that they're our elder brothers and we must love them no matter the evil they do, and we must seek with all of our might to convert them and pray for them. And this doctrine leaves the Christians essentially powerless before the Jews, and the doctrine has enabled the Jews to subvert their organization. So we want to be able to understand this as the Catholic sees it, while retaining our own understanding of it. After receiving my cordial invitation to attend the ADL's 3-day seminar, I had requested the materials to review. Susan Shaw of the ADL had sent only a description of the workshop. Quote, as a bearing witness participant, you will have the opportunity to, quote, learn about the history of anti-Semitism, the role of the church during the Holocaust, and contemporary manifestations of hatred. Quote, look at some painful issues in the Jewish experience and the relationship between Catholics and Jews. Quote, acquire strategies and resources necessary to implement and teach students about the Holocaust. So, everybody in Europe who went through World War II, only the Jews have a special name for whatever they experienced. And according to their dogma, their political lie, they experienced a world historically unique persecution for which they appropriated the Greek term Holocaust and capitalized it and used it to browbeat others and steal hundreds of billions of their dollars in its name. This is the kind of people the Jews actually are. This is what they do. They are masters of the lie. They know how to lie. They know how to coin terms. They know that stupid goyim take things at face value, and if the word exists, then the thing itself must exist. I don't understand. No, my friend, there are words for things that do not exist, and there are no words for things that do exist. Realize it. After a couple of weeks had passed, I reiterated my request and got a slightly fleshed out agenda that again revealed nothing. I found out from emails that speakers had not been confirmed and that the materials were not yet available, so we did nothing, even when the Department of Catholic Schools announced that a grant had marvelously appeared that would make the entire seminar free. Jews always have money to push their dogma, yet white stuff can never get funded. You ever notice that? They run the banks. That provides them the money to run their indoctrination programs endlessly. They can supply them free to anybody. Ultimately, the ADL canceled the Oblate School Seminar and moved it to Florida because only a handful of educators had signed up for it. So I never examined the 2008 materials, but a helpful and gracious fellow principal who had attended the 2006 Houston Bearing Witness Seminar did share her own binders, thus arose this article. And I apologize for not knowing who wrote this. I guess it's at the end, but... where am I now? Let me see. Let me see if I find this. Hold on. It's not Jones. It's... All right. W. Patrick Cunningham. He's not one I'm familiar with. Anyway. We got another half hour and we'll be done with this. So we will have run a little over 3 hours today, I think. If we started around 2:30, we started music before that. Let's see here. Anyway, so they canceled the 2008 seminar. Not enough people signed up for it. But W. Patrick Cunningham got the notes from someone who'd attended a similar seminar in Houston in 2006. Bearing Witness 2006. The sheer volume of material provided to the seminar participants was staggering. A coffee table book on the Holocaust. Sound like something Kramer and Seinfeld would do, huh? And two-inch loose-leaf binders with inserts, reprints, and two CD-ROMs. The vast majority of the material was standard and, except for Holocaust deniers, uncontroversial historical material. It included Nostra Aetate. That's the Vatican II statement on the Jews, the Jewish question. It included Nostra Aetate commentaries on that conciliar document like the ADL's, quote, or this is the title of the ADL document, Transforming the Catholic-Jewish Relationship, and the ADL's pamphlet on Matthew 23. I was constantly forcing myself to remember that this seminar was envisioned as Jews teaching Catholic teachers about the, quote, role of the church during the Holocaust, unquote. Moreover, I was hobbled by not being at the seminar. However, the materials themselves stand on their own as a resource guide for teachers. The four touchstones of Jewish-Catholic relations related to Holocaust studies are well known. First, did scripture and tradition lay the groundwork for the persecution of the Jews? That is, was the Holocaust an inevitable outcome of Catholic history as well as of German history? Second, that is, are Catholics inherently evil? Are Germans inherently evil? You know, just as Jews are supposed to be inherently good and long-suffering and never to blame. All they do is bring good things to those around them, even though every people they've ever been in among has been, according to them, anti-Semitic and has resented their great gifts. Kind of odd that. The only common denominator is Jews and Jewish behavior. So, first, did scripture and tradition lay the groundwork for the persecution of the Jews? Second, did Catholics, particularly Pope Pius XII, that is the World War II Pope, make the situation of the Jews better or worse? Third, what is the attitude of the Church toward the Second Sacrament, the Jewish State of Israel? Finally, will the Church admit the validity of the Jewish covenant apart from its fulfillment in Christ and stop converting or proselytizing Jews? So these are the four pressure points, or the four bases from which they proceed. You know, is the Church inherently anti-Jewish? Is it going to stop trying to convert Jews? Does it recognize the right to Israel? And then the historical matter of how the Pope actually treated the Jews during the so-called Holocaust. And the Holocaust, of course, is an agitprop term that corresponds to no reality. The ADL literature answered most of these questions, and Catholics should generally not like the answers. Not like the answers. Did scripture and tradition lay the groundwork for the persecution? According to the ADL, the answer is yes, through the back door. The literature, particularly in transforming the Catholic-Jewish relationship, and the much truncated reprints, one reproduction gave only the odd pages, another reprinted certain pages of the NCCB, that is the Catholic Conference of Catholic Bishops Council. Another reprinted only certain pages of the NCCB periodical Origins, with no article intact, was supportive of the notion that from the beginning, Scripture was a late artifact of Christianity and anti-Jewish. Much of the argument for the scriptural prejudice against the Jews depends on the theory that the Gospels were written late in the first century, or even later. This notion, common even in Catholic exegetical circles, those are those who interpret the Bible, stems from the anti-Catholic research, quote-unquote, of the 19th century that postulated Mark to be the first gospel. Mark's gospel, Protestant scholars advanced, was the short skeleton of both of the other synoptics. Its theology and view of Jesus was humanistic and thus more original and, quote-unquote, authentic, and its language was in cruder Greek. It omitted the parables and some miracle stories and gives us a Jesus more akin to what must have happened the historical Jesus is what it gives us, he's saying, with historical in quotes. The sayings of Jesus were added by Matthew and Luke from another collection the scholars called Q, which left no manuscript evidence. And Matthew and Luke, by the infancy stories, miracles, and more elaborate passion, death, resurrection narratives, divinized the human Jesus and gave more credibility to the claims of the late first century church. I have argued in Homiletic and Pastoral Review, 2004, after Farmer, that one of the principal motivations for the theory of Markan priority is to eliminate the Petrine claim to primacy. That is St. Peter. The scene at Caesarea Philippi, in which Peter is proclaimed the rock foundation of the church, appears in Matthew but not in Mark. If Matthew is a much later gospel, and the 2S Petrus is retrofitted accretion, then Peter's and later Pope's claims to authority would be weakened. Of course, this claim of inauthenticity also weakens the authority of Scripture. Moreover, it makes no sense if Mark is the gospel of Peter and of the Roman Church. Logically, the Petrine claim should appear in Mark, not be added later to a later gospel, Matthew, that was written in the Holy Land. We're getting a little intense here, but still. Nonetheless, making Mark the first written gospel necessarily pushes back Luke and Matthew to a later decade. From internal evidence, the great majority of scholars conclude that Mark was written during the persecution of Nero in the 7th decade of the 1st century. If Mark was the basis of Matthew and Luke, then those two gospels had to be written later, perhaps as late as the last decade of the 1st century or the first couple of decades of the 2nd. So they're arguing about when these different books of the New Testament were written. Doesn't seem like anyone's saying they were written before 70, 80 years after the so-called resurrection happened, though, which is interesting. This logic depends, of course, on Markan priority. But as John A.T. Robinson, Will Farmer, and especially Claude Tresmontant have argued, there is no hard evidence for the priority of Mark, and ample clues, internal and external, that Matthew was first. So, basically, the Jews are saying that the book of Mark was written first because it serves their interests, whereas the evidence points to Matthew. Externally, we have the testimony of Eusebius, writing the tradition of Clement of Alexandria. These tell us that the Gospels with genealogies, Matthew and Luke, were written first, with Mark following and John last. So Matthew and Luke were written first, then Mark, then John. Another tradition reverses the placement of Luke and Mark, but all traditions respect the priority of Matthew. Farmer, the Gospel of Jesus at 16, is his note there. That's one of the sources he uses. The Farmer, the Gospel of Jesus. According to this tradition, we should see Mark as an abridgment of Matthew for the Roman Church. Internally, the vast preponderance of evidence for an early and primary composition of Matthew, Tresmontant, Tresmontant, spent most of his career showing, conclusively in my opinion, that the tradition that Matthew was first and originally written in Hebrew makes the most sense. That Matthew was first and originally written in Hebrew. His book, The Gospel of Matthew, that's Tresmontant, contains his notes and an English translation of his Hebrew rendition of Matthew's. In it, he shows that many instances of weird wording weird word order in Matthew's Greek can only be explained if that Greek gospel was a direct translation, word for word, of a Hebrew original. In fact, Tresmontant tells us that both in the Septuagint and in the New Testament, the barbarity of the Greek language used would have been a stumbling block for cultured Greeks and Romans. The Christian translators of the original Christian Hebrew writings had to elect between being faithful to the Hebrew original and being faithful to Greek style, word order, and syntax, and they chose the former. So they kind of transliterated it word for word rather than put it into, like, stylish King James type language. Of the hundreds of examples used by Farmer and Tresmontant, look at just one. At many places in the Logia of Jesus recorded in the Gospel, that is, the words of Jesus recorded in the Gospel, the Greek says that Jesus, quote, opened his mouth and said, this phrasing makes no sense either in classical or street Greek, but it occurs frequently in Hebrew writings. It is clearly a word-for-word translation of a Hebrew original which did not survive in writing. Of course, there is practically nothing still extant of the first century manuscripts, either in Hebrew or in Greek. About all we have are the Dead Sea Scrolls, which are not New Testament writings, although one or the other fragment may be taken from Matthew in Hebrew. Okay, let's see here. An early dating of Matthew in a Hebrew original bring the dispute between the early followers of the Way and the Jewish teachers all the way back to Jesus and the early disciples. It appears that the ADL would prefer to have us think that the Christians and Jews lived in almost perfect harmony up until the Jewish War and the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. And he writes about, E. Michael Jones writes about that in great length in his The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and its impact on world history. After that date, AD 70, when the temple was destroyed, or they tried to rebuild it and it couldn't be built, fire burst out due to supernatural causes, or God not wanting it to be built. After that date, 70 AD, the two communities were in conflict, and the Gospel of Matthew rewrote Mark's quote-unquote Gospel of Love to incorporate tension and even outright hatred of the Jews. If, as thoughtful research and church tradition shows, that tension existed between those who accepted Jesus as the Christ and those who did not, even in the early days, it may be something that we cannot ignore today. At any rate, it will affect our dialogue with our elder brothers, the Jews. One final note should wrap up our discussion of the ADL's misreading of the Gospel accounts. Matthew's recording of the Jewish response to Pilate washing his hands of Jesus' death, his blood be upon us and upon our children. That's what the Jews said when Pilate said he washed his hands of the whole thing. The Jews said, Jesus' blood be upon us and upon our children. We are the ones responsible for killing Jesus. Today, if you quote them on that, they say, well, you're anti-Semitic. Quoting a Jew's own words is anti-Semitic. Pretty much everything's anti-Semitic. Existing as a non-Jew is an anti-Semitic act. There is no question that a straightforward reading of the dialogue appears to assign guilt for the death of Jesus to the Jewish people as a whole. The use of this dialogue in some passion plays has been often insensitive and sometimes inflammatory. But all this misses the obvious Old Testament allusion, and missing Old Testament allusions in Matthew is like missing scriptural allusions in Shakespeare. It just makes the commentator look inept. The allusion is to the Old Testament use of bloody sacrifices as atonement for sin. As it stands, the somewhat ironic meaning of all the people's response is to accept the death of Jesus, the Messiah, as the sacrificial Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. The letter to the Hebrews makes this explicit. His blood is upon us, all of us, Gentile or Jew, and our children, and that is our only hope for union with God. Second matter, did the Catholic Church exacerbate the Holocaust? The second question Catholics should ask about the bearing witness is whether the ADL's material makes the Church, particularly Pope Pius XII, responsible for ignoring, exacerbating, or downplaying the persecution of the Jews. The 1962 play The Deputy by Hochuth was the first to condemn Pius XII for his silence about the Holocaust. Prior to that, the Church and the Pope had been universally praised by Jewish leaders for their risk-taking that led to the saving of many hundreds of thousands of Jewish lives. Since the play, since this German wrote this play in 1962, and I don't know if Holkuth is a Jew or not, since the play there's been a steady drumbeat of condemnation from the left of Pius's criminal silence. Again, the Jews hate you, but you're guilty if you don't go out of your way to help them. They hate you and try to undermine your Pope and undermine your institution, but if you don't go out of your way to help them, then they'll denounce you as a hater. No matter what you do, you're supposed to help the Jew. The ADL literature is somewhat mixed on this issue. They do reprint an America, that's a magazine, article that defends Pius. There is a short bibliography, videography, and Rescuers and Non-Jewish Resistance that remarkably ignores the marvelous book and film, The Assisi Underground. I believe that's the Pope in Rome helping to harbor Jews, to hide them from the Nazis. The same Jews who are no doubt denouncing him today. But in their own professional guide, in the student handout for Lesson 9 that discusses the, quote, relatively small number of Jews deported from Israel, from Italy, they write, Catholic institutions such as churches, monasteries, converts, and even the Vatican hid Jews from the Nazis, but the Pope himself, Pius XII, failed to protest the German treatment of the Jews. For that reason, he is still seen by many as a silent collaborator, their term. It's a very small step to move from this statement of barely concealed contempt to calling the saintly Holy Father by the sobriquet Hitler's Pope, and that's what Jew Goldhagen did in his book, and that was the book that inspired E. Michael Jones to write his book, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. And Jew Goldhagen is also the liar who wrote Hitler's Willing Executioners. So, Jews hate Nazis and they hate Catholics. Catholics are opposed to Jews but try to pray for them and win them over, and they hate Nazis. Nazis simply scoff at Catholics' inability to acknowledge fact. And they oppose Jews for obvious reasons. In my opinion, says Cunningham, certain Jewish leaders are still angry that Pius was so helpful to Italian Jews with money, sanctuary, and other aids that the chief rabbi of Rome converted to Catholicism and took as his baptismal name the Pope's birth name, Eugenio. And he's a Pope who's played up in the Catholic marketing, Catholic junk mail you get if you buy one of their Catholic books. I forget his name, but anyway, the Pope was so helpful, Pius that they're now defaming as Hitler's Pope, was so helpful to the Jews that the Grand Rabbi of Rome converted to Catholicism. Pretty interesting. You see how the Jews always try to have everything both ways. They may like and use your help one day, and then the next they'll turn on you as an anti-Semite who didn't do enough. It is calumny and a crime against history to use the word collaborator anywhere near the Pope's name. Fair-minded historians of that era know that every contemporary ecclesiastical condemnation resulted in Nazi reprisals. St. Teresa Benedicta, Edith Stein, I believe she was originally a Jew, and her sister were netted and murdered in the Gestapo roundup that followed immediately on the Dutch bishop's condemnation of Nazi crimes. Pius was ironically caught in a Morton's Fork decision. If he spoke out, he knew many thousands would die, and public opinion would condemn him for the jeopardizing their lives. If he kept quiet, a later and more critical generation would interpret his silence as collaboration, as it has, and public opinion would condemn him for not trying to save lives. I don't know. I mean, this is Catholic claiming that Nazis would have killed thousands of people if the Pope had denounced them. It's not true. I mean, it's hypothetical, so who can say, but it's not true. He is a saint because he did the wise and prudent thing, work behind the scenes to save lives and avoid riling the Nazi monsters. Nazis are monsters, according to the Catholic. It's funny that the Jews go out of their way to criticize and try to destroy the Catholic Church, and the Catholics respond by loving them. The Nazis went out of their way to defeat the people who were trying to subvert and destroy the Catholic Church, and the Catholics respond by calling them monsters. Even though Hitler said, as we discussed when we were talking about the Nameless War, Hitler said the Catholic Church and the British Empire were two stanchions of stability. And he did not mean to undermine them, yet the Catholics hate him. Interesting. There's a real story in there, and that's what we've been puzzling out these last few Radio Astinas. And I think ultimately what lies at the bottom of it is recognition that the Nazis have something the Catholics don't. And that's a better vision of what man can be based on a more accurate understanding of what he actually is. In my opinion, says Cunningham, a Catholic educator who puts the ADL handout in the book bag of a Catholic school student ought to be severely disciplined. Finally, turning to the third man of the Jewish state. One of the ongoing disagreements between modern Catholics and Jews is the Catholic attitude toward the state of Israel. Modern popes have agreed that, despite the injustices perpetrated in its foundation, Israel has the right of existence in peace. On other issues, there is contention. All have insisted on a two-state solution, something that continues to elude politicians because of extremists on both sides. It has been suggested that Jerusalem, the primary focus of argument, become an international city. The Jewish settlements put on stolen Palestinian land and the Wall of Shame also divide the Vatican and Tel Aviv. And there are lingering problems between the two parties involving the church property in the Holy Land. The ADL literature, except in certain bibliographical references, does not focus on the foundation, existence, or practices of the State of Israel, but it is clear from the itinerary of the graduate course outlined early in this paper, that is, the Bearing Witness Goldman program, so to speak, advanced rather than basic program. In that program, in the advanced program, students would be expected to concur, to agree with the sacramental nature of the Jewish state. That is, it's set up by God in heaven, and no mere man dare oppose it. A useful counterbalance to the lopsided view of the Israeli tour offers would be a two-week pilgrimage to Jordan, Israel, and the West Bank with a Christian Palestinian guide. Not a trip your average congressman or writer is likely to take. An immersion in Holocaust studies can make the crimes committed by the, quote, fighters for the freedom of Israel, unquote, i.e. the Stern Gang, and the theft of Palestinian territory seem like just payback. In other words, Golda Meir's, after the Holocaust, we can do anything we want. Direct quote. Jew Golda Meir, who was the head of Israel, after the Holocaust, we can do anything we want. The ADL is much more forthcoming in the Bearing Witness literature about the church's mission to the Jews. There should be none. This is the fourth issue. As their book, Transforming the Catholic-Jewish Relationship, states at 41, it is also clear that since Nostra Aetate, a mission of the Jews is anathema to true Christian witness. So, that's why the Jews celebrate, just as they took over America, and it affords them the chance to call anyone opposed to the way they've reordered things an anti-American, they can claim the basis of Vatican II and its liberalizing, that is, Judeo-communizing modernism, that anyone opposed to the new order of things is anti-Catholic, or is not a true Catholic. So they're trying to be more Catholic than 1950 years of popes. If you don't adopt their new version of how they're supposed to deal with the Jews, rather than love and convert them, you're supposed to just leave them alone, then you're a anti-Catholic, they can claim. There is nothing like that in Nostra Aetate, says Cunningham, that they shouldn't reach out and try to proselytize the Jews. The Council Fathers tell us in Article 4, quote, even so, the Apostle Paul maintains that the Jews remain very dear to God for the sake of the patriarchs, since God does not take back the gifts he bestowed or the choice he made, unquote. But Paul never abandoned the mission to the Jews. Indeed, as the Acts of the Apostles confirm, he always went first to the Jews to preach the crucified Christ. Nostra Aetate states clearly, it is true that the church is the new people of God, just before it condemns speaking of Jews as, quote, rejected or accursed. There are not two covenants, but one. The Mosaic covenant is fulfilled in Jesus Christ and the church. Again, this is whether the first covenant is in fact superseded by the second covenant. Whether the Jews, as E. Michael Jones would say, when they rejected Christ, that's when they became Jews. And Christians took up the covenant where the Jews put it down by rejecting the Messiah. That's the Catholic position. In the reprint Roots and Branches, Biblical Judaism, Rabbinic Judaism, and Early Christianity by Rabbi Klenicki, K-L-E-N-I-C-K-I, and Catholic writer Eugene J. Fisher, who retired in 2007 as an associate director for the USCCB's Secretariat for Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs, we see a rejection of this teaching. Fisher is a longtime friend of Israel, so we're probably talking about a sellout here. In exchange for personal promotion and favor, he sells out the church's traditional position on the Jews, just as we've seen Hesburgh did at Notre Dame, and the other Catholic institutions did by bringing in Jewish professors and Jewish ideas in order to be relevant, hip, and receive federal money. Sellouts prosper, at least for a time. Fisher is a longtime friend of Israel. Klenicki and Fisher set up a straw man to justify their position. The two authors define supersessionism as the belief that, quote, God had abrogated the covenant with the Jewish people because of the alleged crime of deicide, punishing them by destroying the temple, that was in 70 AD, and putting the church in the place of the Jewish people as God's chosen. This is a risible, a risible caricature, a laughable caricature of the church's teaching, although one that has been popular from time to time in history. Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI, gives us a better definition that adheres to what Scripture and tradition really teach. Quote, thus the Sinai covenant is indeed superseded. But once what was provisional has been swept away, we see what is truly definitive in it. So the expectation of the new covenant, which becomes clearer and clearer as the history of Israel unfolds, does not conflict with the Sinai covenant. Rather, it fulfills the dynamic expectation found in that very covenant. From the perspective of Jesus, the law and the prophets are not in opposition. Moses himself, as Deuteronomy tells us, is a prophet that can only be understood correctly if he is read as such. In many religions, essay 2, that's where the reference is from, is 2. The Sinai covenant is superseded, and Jones has it spelled wrong at least two times. It's superseded is spelled S-U-P-E-R-S-E-D-E-D. The Sinai covenant is superseded, and the proof for that is that because of the destruction of the temple, most of Torah has been incapable of being obeyed for almost two millennia. The Abrahamic covenant is fulfilled in Christ. Moreover, even Torah is fulfilled in Christ because His grace allows man to keep the two great commandments. The operant word here is fulfillment, not rejection. Anyone who is saved, who is part of the kingdom of God, seeing God face to face, is saved in Jesus the Messiah. The materials distributed in the 2006 workshop bear many of the characteristics of propaganda. In fact, the materials fit exactly their own definition of propaganda on page 58, except they don't twist the truth, they, quote, edit it. They omit, for instance, any discussion of the European perception of the Jewish revolutionary and the historical connection of Jewish revolutionaries to the Bolshevik party that seemed to legitimize the German Nazi reaction. Nazi philosophy is seen as rising without provocation from a general European anti-Semitism. So Jews are always innocent and non-Jews are always guilty, even though Nazism was in large measure reaction to the horror, the worst things ever seen on the face of the earth in the Soviet Union created by and for Jews and carried out on the bodies of Christian whites, starving them to death, ripping down their churches, murdering their priests, mocking them in the papers, putting in the full liberal communist agenda. In their words, quote, anti-Semitism had long been deeply rooted in Germany and other European countries and grounded in the doctrine of Christianity. So they're going to use their imaginary suffering, which they collected and packaged under the designer term Holocaust, appropriate. They didn't invent the term. They repurposed it from its Greek meaning as a burnt offering. They're going to use that to bash Christians and whites, European white Christians, from both angles, from the religious and from the racial angle. Try to force them to toe their line or guilt them into submission. But the materials are not without value for the researcher and teacher, even if they need considerable study before using them in the classroom. The CD in particular has valuable footage that could be used in a moral study of genocide and discrimination. History classes will find valuable bibliographies and filmographies, even if they are incomplete. If anti-Jewish bigotry rears its head in a school, this material might be one of the resources used in remediation. And I would disagree with them here. I suspect it's a bunch of lies what they have, because they lie everywhere else. Better to read the so-called revisionists than the fabulists, the Holocaust alledgers and promoters, creators and designers. If we are to root out racism and bigotry, and again, there's no acknowledgement given that this is a Jewish propaganda term, racism, rather than an objective word, or a word coined to communicate an objective phenomenon, because the Catholics don't like the Jews, or don't like the Nazis, and so they drop their standards, and include Jewish agitprop where it serves their agenda. Very dishonest of them. Weak shows their weak character, their intellectual dishonesty. A perusal of some of Michael Jones's Culture Wars articles would be a welcome counterbalance and supplement. Unfortunately for the ADL's, and we're almost done here, high-cost effort, the whole genre of Holocaust studies may be past its prime in the Catholic schools. A trio of realities are forcing Holocaust curricula into smaller and smaller pigeonholes of time. First, the revelation that Knight and the rest of the Elie Wiesel opera, the rest of his works, were in some ways misleading. First, the revelation that Night, that is the book written, the nonfiction book, I'm sorry, the novel, the fictional novel written by Elie Wiesel, and the rest of his works were in some way misleading, has cast a shadow on the whole movement. That's a pity, says Cunningham, particularly because it's very much like rejecting the teaching of the Catholic Church because of the sordid crimes of 1% of her priests. Well, that's a false analogy, because all those promoting the Holocaust are liars. There weren't any gassings. If they're lying about gassing, what wouldn't they be lying about? But that's a small factor in the trend away from the high school students studying the Jewish experience in the war. The second factor is that No Child Left Behind, which affects mostly public schools, has also put pressure on Catholic schools to enhance and demonstrate their performance. This means more testing and more emphasis on math and science. In our state, the Catholic Oversight Agency, TCCED, and I have no idea what that stands for, the Catholic Council on Educational something, has mandated 4 years of religion, math, social studies, English, and 3 years of science and foreign languages. Add a year of computer science, a year of art, and 2 years of physical education, plus a year of health, and there's zero time left in a 7-period day. Furthermore, we are expected to follow the Texas curriculum guides, which are extremely thorough and give little time to Holocaust studies. The word Holocaust appears only twice in the world history curriculum, and that as a subset of a very small section. The word Jew does not appear at all. So that's good news. The third factor is an even more important in Catholic education. The U.S. Catholic Conference recently published its framework for a 4-year Catholic school religion program. There are 6 sections in the core, or the required curriculum, all centered around Jesus Christ and the continuation of Jesus' mission in the world through the church. That will take up 3 years if 2 sections are covered each year. There are 5 electives: sacred scripture, church history, living as a disciple of Christ in society, responding to Christ's call, and ecumenical and interreligious issues. The word Holocaust does not appear once in any section. Neither does the word genocide. The word Jew and treatment of Jewish-Catholic relations appears in the last elective course, ecumenical and interreligious issues. I can't read my own mind perfectly, let alone the mind of other educators, but I strongly suspect that, for good or for ill, this one will be the very last elective offered in Catholic high schools. So, it's just Jews being Jews and doing what Jews do. Just trying to force you to take their view of themselves. even though it's completely against your own self-interest and the interest of your racial group and your religion. Well, they wouldn't be Jews if they didn't try. We must resist them at every point at which they try to subvert us. More than that, we must attack them. Attacking the Jew is nothing more than telling the truth about him and urging others to join you in fighting against him and organizing against him, speaking against him, demonstrating against him, pointing out where he lies, pointing out why he lies, pointing out what his lies will lead to, their consequences. This is the white nationalist cause, liberating ourselves from the Jew and his minions, the GEWS. With that, I think we'll wrap it up today. I want to thank you for listening to me today on Tuesday, November 4th, 2008. Election Day it is. I'll be back with you next Tuesday. And we'll have a new slate of news items and some of the deeper evergreen material. In the meantime, I encourage you to join VNNForum.com, serious, responsible commentators, unafraid to speak their minds, proud, noble whites, operating in their own system, their own way, by their own lights, in line with our multi-thousand-year racial tradition. You listening to this, and me, we are the good guys. To all those opposed, well, good luck. You're going to need it. Again, I'm Alex Linder, and thanks for listening to Radio Astina. Be with you next week, next Tuesday, 1 p.m. Central.